is Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, March 31st, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dave Weigel, reporter, politics reporter for Semaphore, will be joining us on the important elections and the massive amount of money that Elon Musk has dumped into him this week. Also on the program, it's tariffs week again, as farmers and purchasers of goods start to panic. And here's something. You haven't heard this term in years. Stagflation. Financial forecasters are seeing it on the horizon. Meanwhile, Mike Waltz may be the odd man out as Signalgate still reverberates in D.C. En France, Marine Le Pen, à droite, très à droite. I tried to.
Yes.
Yeah,
love the romance language.
La poupée qui fait non.
Yeah.
Gérald Depardieu over here.
Marine Le Pen gets 2 years in prison, 2 years suspended sentence, and banned from presidential elections for embezzlement. And after quietly reversing on closing 47 Social Security Administration offices, Doge is now primed to crash the entire Social Security operating system. Secretary of Quackery RFK Jr. expected to lay off all the workers in the Infectious Disease and HIV AIDS Policy Department. As Tesla protests continue in U.S., Tesla dealership in Rome, Italy, loses about 8 Teslas to fires set in the Teslas.
So sad.
Democrats in Rome. Iran rejects direct talks with the U.S., reacting to Trump's letter. Emboldened by Chuck Schumer's cave, Senate Republicans now are racing toward a budget resolution for reconciliation. Possible vote this week. All this and more on today's Majority Report. It is Monday.
It is fun day Monday.
Fun day Monday.
Although maybe fun deferred, because I think we have to wait until we hear what the outcome of the special elections is going to be, whether or not we're having fun with them.
That's right. I guess that's fair, says Emma Vigeland.
Yes, that's me. Hi.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Beginning of the week, I'm already starting to get angry IMs from the farmers in the IM section. Kowalski from Nebraska says, farmers starting to panic, Stan. I've been stuck piling resources for the last month and a half to wait out the coming storm.
It's insane.
Also, we're talking about elections that, and we'll be talking to Dave Weigel in a bit about this. There's really basically three things that we can do right now as a society to deal with the growing authoritarianism and fascism we're seeing in this administration. Donald Trump out there saying that he wants to run for a third term. He's not joking. Right now, you can't see a path to that happening legally, but it's unclear where we'll be in 4 years and how robust at a time when Republicans are saying due process is a nicety that we no longer need. And I'm specifically talking about YouGov came out with a poll this week. Maybe we'll talk more about this later. But YouGov came out with a poll this week about deporting undocumented immigrants who have committed a crime. I don't know what the numbers were, 75%. Then they asked the question, however, if doing these deportations require the deportation accidentally of people who are in this country legally, are you still for it? And then all of a sudden, only 29% of people are for it. There is one cohort that is okay with essentially no due process, with scooping up people who are perfectly legal in this country and deporting them. And that is conservatives and Republicans. Actually, they both came in at 52% were okay with that. So as a society, we're facing a growing fascist movement and a an administration that is, you know, pretty fashy, as it were. There are really basically three things, and we've talked about them a lot, that can slow this roll. One is just broadly organizing. That encompasses, I think, labor unions, but also just labor in general and tenants and your neighborhood and your friends, and all the things that come out of these organizing. Sometimes it means protests. Sometimes it means just being at the ready, all of that. And the courts right now are one of the biggest things that are slowing the roll of this administration. They will adjust. And of course, they're also getting law firms to provide them pro bono work. We have yet to see how that pro bono work is going to be deployed. And they're getting other institutions, frankly, to do their work for them.
Oh, yeah.
Caving before anything gets going, you know, universities, et cetera. We don't really right now have much in terms of the Democratic Party, because it's our leadership in the Democratic Party seems to be incapable of fighting, understanding the moment. However, there is an electoral component to it, and it's these elections this week that are really important, because to the extent that incumbent Republican lawmakers have a sensitivity to losing their elections. On one hand, on one side of them is Elon Musk promising to deploy a lot of money in primaries against them if they in any way provide any friction to Trump's agenda. But on the other hand, we're starting to see out of that Pennsylvania elections last week that there could be a 15-point swing in the general election for a lot of these lawmakers. And as such, their calculation is different. It doesn't matter if I get through the primary, if I'm going to, you know, absolutely get destroyed in the general. And if I can just get through, so if I can get through the primary and Musk can't deploy, you know, his resources all over the place, they're going to support me in the general because I'm a vote for them. So it changes marginally. A 15-point deficit going into an election would be a problem for a lot of these people. And so as such, you see Elon Musk and the Republican Party, their hair is on fire right now. Elise Stefanik is the first casualty of that. she would be getting her, what, apparently?
Oh, well, apparently I thought that she might have had to put a down payment on a fancy apartment or a condo in New York, but apparently you get one of the swankiest apartments for free as UN ambassador. She thought she'd be dining with diplomats.
She was definitely picking out curtains for her apartment, and now it's all ruined for her because they're afraid of taking her out of the house because they're afraid of losing these elections.
Right.
And so Elon Musk has been deployed. He has taken his big screen TV and is in Wisconsin yesterday, I should say. I guess this was Sunday. Yes. He's in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And he's got about a crowd of 2,000 people, which is not it's not a small crowd. This is an election, and we're going to talk to Dave Weigel about it, and we talked to Ben Wickler about it, for a Supreme Court seat in Wisconsin. Weigel will tell us why it's so important, but Elon Musk clearly thinks it is because he's left the cot he has in the White House to go to Wisconsin. I mean, this is time away from destroying Social Security, so you know it's important.
That's his passion. Well, but this is also about his wealth as well, because Elon Musk Tesla has been suing Wisconsin because the state blocked an ownership the opening of a dealership there. So this is all about his bottom line and trying to use his connection with the Trump administration to prop up Tesla as it's cratering in the markets. And as we're getting information about these Chinese electric vehicles who could start doing business with Canada and Mexico potentially because of these Trump tariffs, just completely outpacing him in terms of battery technology. Apparently, BYD in China just had a breakthrough, and their batteries might be able to charge in the same amount of time that it would take to fill up a gas tank,
wow,
which would be absolutely like blowing Tesla out of the water. So that's why he has to use the Trump administration, because he's afraid of what happens if Tesla stock dips below a certain point. If he used that as collateral for his Twitter purchase, this means a whole house of cards could fall. The whole house of cards could fall.
And he's definitely concerned about this. He just had apparently Grok AI is a separate company. And he just had that purchase Twitter.
Right.
Now, we're still pulling that apart, and we're going to need some writing
looks
on
shady,
that.
Though.
But it is definitely a way of creating another layer of distance between that moment of reckoning. So he's got a lot of motivation. And again, he's also trying to show, like, if you go up against Trump in a primary, this is what I could do to you if you were running in a House district. And now remember, there's only 2,000 people in this this auditorium. It doesn't feel like they're all Musk supporters.
Some of them wanted the $1 million he was promising.
SuckUp website and the Doge handle on the X platform. There is a tremendous amount of waste and fraud in the federal government. Like, shocking, really. It's insane. Yeah. It's really wild. So, like, I mean, it was inevitable that at least a few Soros operatives would be in the audience. Give my regards to George. Say hi to George for me. USA, 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 USA. Yep.
Okay.
I mean, it was.
Now, this is like a Black Mirror episode. He is complaining about a foreign-born billionaire who has been, I guess, presumably paying activists to influence elections as he sits in a room where
full
he
of those
is
hogs.
Literally offering $1 million to someone who has voted in this election already. And he's doing this on a daily basis.
Soros's net worth is around $7 billion. Elon's is over $340 billion. But
those
Soros
people are explicitly
is a little,
there.
What'd you say?
Those people are explicitly there for the promise
yes.
of money.
But also, Soros is a bit Jewish. And if you recall, Elon Musk endorsed that anti-Semitic conspiracy theory back in the day when the ADL was condemning him. And now they're saying, oh, because he's a part of the Trump administration,
it's tense time.
That is fully Zionist. Maybe that Nazi salute wasn't so Nazi-y.
The ability of him to say, to be sitting up there and say without irony, there's a billionaire who's trying to influence elections with paid operatives.
Yeah.
As he looks out on a sea of probably a decent amount of his own paid operatives, all of whom the people there are there for the money. It's
And clearly have no problem with billionaires spending to rig elections.
It's
or to rig comedy crowds. I mean, George Soros must have also paid for all of those people in Dave Chappelle's crowd that booed him so badly that he had to be, what, institutionalized for hurt feelings? Isn't that what happened?
They had to have a wellness check.
Maybe.
When did this happen?
After Chappelle, he did the thing where he came out on Chappelle after firing a bunch of Twitter people and everybody in the crowd.
Oh, Musk did. Okay, and Musk back in the day, yes.
I'm Rick, bitch.
Here is Elon Musk talking about his vision on stage there. I guess he was taking questions. And he's asked... a teacher asked about, like, what are we going to do about student-teacher ratios because we're getting all these cuts? Education department, incidentally, provides supplemental funding for primarily low-income urban and rural schools. And this teacher wants to know how to fix it. And Elon Musk has a solution.
He knows kids. You know, Elon Musk, he understands child, well, maybe not child rearing and raising them, but he knows how to spawn children. I guess maybe he has some ideas on how to teach them.
With your investments in Khan Academy, with the advancement of AI educational tools, where specifically you can get feedback and these students can get feedback.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do we see 100 years from now?
With all 100 years from now?
How about 50?
I hope we last 100 years. That'd be like jackpot. You know? Yeah, exactly. Hopefully we're like on Mars, you know? So that would be really cool.
Pause it for a second. Why would you hope that we're going to be on Mars in 100 years? I mean, what is going on in his head that he says this? Does this mean he believes in climate change and that we shouldn't do anything about it?
No, he's afraid of the woke mind virus.
He's also just has a fundamentally anti-humanist worldview. And so basically, instead of improving all of humanity, let's flee to his colony that he'll commodify. And AI, you know, who needs...
But I don't understand why you would say hopefully. It's just so... bizarre.
He doesn't believe any of this. We'll watch the interview Hassan did with Vivian, his estranged daughter, but it's all marketing. He knows that stupid pigs believe this stuff when he says it, and it helps get him in the newspapers. He is not sincere about believing that we're going to get to Mars.
So that would be really cool. I do think AI can be incredibly helpful in teaching because you can essentially set up each kid with like a personalized AI, and that AI can then answer questions for each kid, and that actually can be very profound in learning, because obviously if you've got a classroom of say 25, 30 kids, it's literally impossible to spend time with every kid individually, or at least you can spend a little bit of time, but not obviously it's a 1-to-20, 1-to-30 ratio. So, but what you can do is you can set them up with the AI, and then you can, you know, if things get stuck or whatever, if you want to, you can essentially guide the orchestra that way, and I think it could be a very powerful learning tool. You know, I personally enjoyed my English classes in high school, actually. Sometimes I wondered, why am I reading Charles Dickens? But, you know, there's some merit to reading Dickens and many of the. I actually think that we should have a great canon of English literature that kids do at least, you know, some number of the significant works in the English language. So,
okay, now there's a couple of things to point out here, and maybe we can work from the end back. First off, it's a very strange thing to say the English canon. I mean, books get published in English that are not written there in the entire time. I think what Western. He's really saying is Western, and in that instance. And he begrudgingly admits that there is a value to being able to read. But what he doesn't understand about education, and I think, like, you know, college students using AI, maybe older high school students, but the whole point of educating kids in elementary school and in middle school is not necessarily to give them rote knowledge, which is, you need some of that, but it is literally how to learn. And it's conceivable, I guess, in 100 years that we may have an AI that has the ability to assess the learning style of children and the specifics of any given child. But that's the whole point of a human being teacher, is that they have the sensitivity to understand this child learns best in this type of way. This child has these learning deficits in that type of way, and then address those. That's what a good teacher does. Not just, you know, what year was the Civil War? And
right.
Well, I don't think he has an idea.
Yeah, well, he has no idea how to raise children because he doesn't do it. But or what children need. They need human interaction and somebody that works through problems with them. Like, there haven't been enough studies done on this. But anecdotally, professors and teachers are saying that reading comprehension is way down. I think that was in part due to the pandemic, but it's in part due to not prioritizing our education.
It's also phones.
And phones.
I would say it's yeah. I mean, the competition for reading now for kids is just nuts. Yeah. And of course he didn't like Dickens.
Yeah.
Why couldn't it be A Tale of One City?
It was just the best of times.
Exactly.
It was the best of times.
In a moment, we're going to talk to Dave Weigel about why Elon Musk is out in Wisconsin and also about what's going on in Florida. First, a couple of words from our sponsors. Years ago, we had some Nutrafol in the office. They had sent it to us. They were asking us if we wanted to have a sponsor. At the time, I was like, I don't need to take Nutrafol. And I'd asked Michael, co-host at the time. He was like, no, why would I?
I don't need it.
Yeah, I don't need it. Then a couple of years ago, I was like, I'm starting to feel like I'm having a little thinning. I'm getting up there, and I didn't want to. I wanted to see more hair growth, and so I started taking Nutrafol. And then they came back, and we were like, "Okay, I'll advertise for you now." Nutrafol, number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. It is trusted by over 1.5 million people. You will see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in 3 to 6 months. With Nutrafol. Thinning hair is different for men and women, so a one-size-fits-all approach to that hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas for men and women that are tailored to different life stages, such as postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors, such as plant-based lifestyle, so you can get just what you need. It's physician-formulated, 100% drug-free ingredients. Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting key root causes of thinning stress. I mean, of thinning, rather, I should say. Stress, hormones, aging, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism through whole body health. Both Emma and I know people who had serious issues with thinning in their hair, and Nutrafol helped them out big time.
Absolutely.
Both women, actually. Start your hair growth journey with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com. Enter the promo code TMR10. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled NutrafoL.com. Promo code TMR10, the number 10. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TMR10. We'll put the link in the description in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Also sponsoring the program today, Zippix. This episode is brought to you by Zippix nicotine-infused toothpicks. Zippix bring you a totally satisfying, convenient, and great-tasting way to curb your nicotine cravings. Now you can get your nicotine fix anytime, anywhere, without having to rely on smoking or vaping. Zippix toothpicks give you an easier, better, and more discreet way to get your fix. They're available in six great long-lasting flavors. They have two options, 2 milligram and 3 milligram of nicotine. And they also have a caffeine and B12-infused toothpicks that give you a little energy boost. But if you want to like sort of titrate off the nicotine, that's the way you do it. You can use Zippix toothpicks on, you know, air flights or sporting events, literally everywhere that, smoking and vaping are banned. They are one of the most cost-effective nicotine products on the market. They are proudly made in the U.S. Just this weekend, a friend of mine was using Zippix because he's quit smoking.
Wow.
Yep.
And very I was like, nice.
We advertise for them. It was pretty great to see that. Zippix have already helped hundreds of thousands of customers get their nicotine fix without having to inhale smoke or vape oils. So what are you waiting for? Give your lungs a break. Try Zippix nicotine-infused toothpicks. Ditch the cigarettes. Ditch the vapes. Get some nicotine-infused toothpicks at ZippixToothpicks.com today. Get 10% off your first order by using the code MajorityReport at checkout. Your lungs are going to be glad you did. Must be 21 or older to order. Warning, nicotine is an addictive chemical. Zip more, smoke less with Zippix nicotine toothpicks. Again, check the podcast and YouTube descriptions for the links and the codes. Quick break, Dave Weigel from Semaphore. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Joining us now, Dave Weigel. He covers politics for Semaphore. And one of my favorite Twitter and followers and follows and
reporters,
the Semaphore. I get it's emailed directly to me, your reporting, and I love it. Dave, always a pleasure to have you.
No, good to be back. Thanks, guys.
Good to see you.
So, were you out in Wisconsin covering this?
I was.
Okay.
Yeah, not the last week. I was there when Don Jr. was campaigning for the Republican nominee and when Tim Walz was campaigning for the Democratic nominee. So I was there a week ago, but you could see what the plan was.
They're not technically Republican and Democrat, right? I mean, it's a non-party.
I'm using. Right. You can explain it. Go ahead.
Well, it's a nonpartisan election, but it's quite clear there's a liberal and a conservative running for the Supreme Court.
Right.
And this will determine it's a liberal that is stepping down. So this will determine the majority controlling. Right now, it's the majority is controlled by the liberals.
Yeah, this would be a conservative majority for 2 years if conservatives win this. The Democrats, you've probably talked to Ben Winkler about this, they had a long-term plan, which is not even done yet. The plan was to win the state Supreme Court, bring a case that would break this gerrymander, which already happened. The state legislature is not as gerrymandered as it was. They're in a position to actually maybe win the state Senate next year, which was impossible under the old gerrymander. And the Republican plan is win this election, bring a new lawsuit. They won't say who will do it. Bring a new lawsuit, re-gerrymander the state, undo what Democrats did. To prevent that, Democrats are just trying to hold their majority.
And we should be clear, when Republicans had gerrymandered Wisconsin, a 57% electoral win in terms of votes in Wisconsin brought about something like 65% control for Republicans. That's how much it was gerrymandered. Now, to be fair, in there, you know, you had some races where people aren't running against each other, et cetera, and some places where the votes get rolled up. But that was the dynamic.
Yeah, it was impossible for Democrats to win the legislature. And because they couldn't win the legislature, impossible to get a 50-50 map. Right now, it's a, you know, eight seats in a 50-50 swing state. Republicans have two. Democrats can kind of compete for the third one. And the only – so the way this
race
started –
You're talking about Congress.
Yeah, for Congress, sorry, for the House of Representatives. And so the original focus of Republican messaging on this race was there was a fundraiser for the Democratic back candidate, Susan Crawford. Susan Crawford's the liberal majority candidate. Brad Schimmel, former attorney general, would be the conservative candidate. The one fundraiser where people said pointed out in Reid Hoffman's group, hey, if we win this, we could – remap the state, and Republicans started to say this whole election is an attempt by Democrats to rig the state so that they're going to get rid of the first district and the third district and make them Democratic and will never win again, et cetera, et cetera. If there was nonpartisan redistricting, you probably would have four swing, let's say, some safe R seats, some safe D seats, and some swing seats. That's how it started. But then as Elon got more involved in this race, he picked that argument up and he made it entirely about voting in this election will change the course of civilization. You need to do this so that activist judges around the country are punished because they're not letting Trump and me do what I want. It changed, but it started with this a little bit esoteric redistricting argument. It got a lot more politically intense.
Just give us a sense of the money disparity that's being spent in these races, because when Elon Musk decides to move in, it all of a sudden changes the physics of everything.
Right. Well, it is. If you look up all of the Democratic spending, all of the Republican spending, it is pretty even. But it would have been a Democratic advantage, but for Elon Musk, he's going to end up having spent at least $23 million, and that's between donating to the state party, which he did pretty recently, having America PAC spend money in the state, and having Building America's Future PAC buy ads in the state. And the ads have mostly those three things have different tasks, but they basically have ended what was the Democratic fundraising advantage, which was a combination of big donors giving to the state party. That's an old Scott Walker law that's still in the books. You can give unlimited money to the state party. And Democrats having good small-dollar fundraising. So Susan Crawford, a judge from Dane County, has lapped Republicans in personal fundraising for her campaign, small donors. If you watch the debate, you can hear the Republican-backed candidate say that this is bad. This is out-of-staters trying to buy the election. And you can hear Crawford hit back, yes, but Elon Musk, this is a guy out-of-state who's trying to bury the support from Wisconsinites and people from around the country. The small dollar donors is trying to bury them with literally giant checks. That's what the race has been about. The conversation about the race in Wisconsin for the last 72 hours is, wait a second, who is actually trying to buy this? Is it small donors? Is it J.B. Pritzker because he gave $1 million to the state party? Or is it Elon Musk outspending everybody on his own?
Well, also, I was shocked to hear you say that final total, because this morning before you came on, I was reading your article in Semaphore about it, that it was $11 million when, I guess, you wrote this up maybe 10, 11 days ago, and now more than doubled. Like, can you talk about that broader context and also Elon Musk's case that could be delineated by the Wisconsin Supreme Court about his dealerships for Tesla, which I think is a part of his motivation, right?
It's part of his motivation. So his rhetoric at his own events and on X, etc., is we need to do this to stop illegal voting. We need to do this to save Doge. We need to do this to stop illegal immigration. Everything, every Republican issue. But yeah, so Tesla wants to sell cars without dealerships. It sued in Wisconsin before this race started. It was not winning that case. That is one of the first things Democrats grabbed onto is it seems bad that a guy who wants a particular thing that might come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court is spending all this money in our state. Because whatever you think of George Soros donating to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, he's not saying, and also you're going to kick back to me a bunch of things I want, right? You're going to hand over a lot of state investments to my hedge fund. No, it's that it's kind of understood that the big donors on the Democratic side were just liberals who said, please do some liberal things if you win, but nothing for me personally. And yes, Musk has a personal interest in the state. Schimmel has said that he would rule it in a nonpartisan fashion on anything Elon does, but he's also commented on Elon and said he's doing the right thing. He's very pro-Doge. It's very muddled, and this is not news to anybody listening to this, but the law exists in different ways. You have no money, and if you have $400 billion, Musk operates with impunity because he can have lawyers drag everything out. He can he has the confidence that if there's a federal crime, that Donald Trump is going to pardon people. He has the confidence that he can pressure judges into recusing. If somebody sues, if he wants to sue somebody, he sues them in Texas where he has a favorable judge. So Musk has been operating in this like he operates everywhere. I mean, the same way that Musk is confident that no one's going to really nail SpaceX for polluting some space junk in near Brownsville, Texas. But in this race, he's the Republican messaging that he's emphasized is not even about him. It's, yes, I'm great. I'm Elon Musk. You all support me. Doge is doing the right thing. It's if you want the Trump agenda to succeed, we know you don't normally care about a court race. And whatever you think of me, come out and vote for Donald Trump. So America PAC, his PAC, it's a stuff it's sending to the doors is all about Trump. Vote for Brad Schimmel to support Donald Trump. He had Sean Duffy at his Elon had Sean Duffy at his rally in Green Bay last night as the transportation secretary, saying this election is a way to show your support for Doge and for Donald Trump. That's what they're doing. It's so Elon gets some benefits if this goes the right way. But he's also happily reframing everything as pro-Trump, because what do MAGA voters care more about? Do they care more about Teslas being sold in Wisconsin, or do they care more about supporting their beloved president?
Right.
All right. So, and I want to sort of like pivot to Florida, these races, but from a political matter, like what is the, for him to get this involved, I don't know that it's just Tesla. I'm sure that's, you know, things can be a twofer. And that Doge stuff, but just talk to us about how the politics influence, like, you know, and that also brings us to Florida. And has Musk invested in Florida? It's it doesn't feel like he has that much. And if not, why? Because it has a similar dynamic, it seems to me. I mean, Wisconsin could be a swing of like three congressional seats by, you know, in 2 years. But the results of these things, even if the Democrats lose in Florida, which, you know, odds are that they will.
They think they'll lose. Yeah, yeah.
But it still makes a difference where the points land, right? Because this is going to influence lawmakers, period.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, one question coming out of this race is, one, can you convince MAGA voters to show up for somebody who's not Donald Trump? Because Democrats have had pretty good special elections, flipped a couple seats already this year in Iowa and Pennsylvania because MAGA voters are not coming out. They had this in Wisconsin last year. Tammy Baldwin did not get as many votes as Kamala Harris. It's just that a bunch of people voted for Donald Trump and then didn't care about the rest of the Republican Party. That was a benefit even when Trump was on the ballot. So how do you get people to say, my vote is about Donald Trump, I'm going to come out? If you can turn the MAGA voter of a presidential year into a regular Republican voter, then obviously you're going to benefit in a lot of ways. That has not been happening in these places. That was not happening in early voting in Florida. So the reason Republicans started to get worried is because they had a candidate, Randy Fine, who is personally, if you talk to Republicans in Tallahassee, talk to DeSantis, personally obnoxious, a very pugnacious Republican that a lot of people in the party don't like and didn't want to support and didn't give money to, barely running a campaign, not doing much of an early vote, Democrats outrunning him. And their whole argument has been support Donald Trump, show up on election day. That's the thing. What kind of politics are possible if you just get Trump voters to show up in non-Trump elections? Because I wrote in one of my stories about this that in 2019, Republicans won a Supreme Court race in Wisconsin, partly by sending a bunch of mail to voters and saying, hey, if you're a Republican voter, aren't you still angry about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings? To get revenge for Brett Kavanaugh and to beat liberal judges like the ones Brett Kavanaugh is not, vote for our candidate. And it was pretty effective. But it's been competing against Democrats in Wisconsin under Ben Wickler being very, very well organized, beating all their metrics, turning out for everything. And Wickler is very blunt that our voters are furious and on tilt all the time. And their voters are pretty happy that Trump is owning the libs. So we don't think they're going to turn out the same way.
Let's play this Josh Weil article because I have also ad, I should say. I also have a theory about like if Musk showing up actually hurts the cause more than helps. But I want to ask you about that. But first, this is from Florida's 6th District. This is around the Daytona Beach area. This is the race that they think they can win. There's another one, 1st District, and that was Gaetz's old seat. This is Michael Waltz's old seat. And the irony is he may be out of the administration before anybody actually takes this,
we'll see.
Is sworn in.
Yeah.
In Congress because of his, inability to, his fat thumbs, I guess, when it comes to his signal, chats. But, this is, let's play this.
I'm Josh Weil. And I approve this message.
Randy Fine, a violent, corrupt politician, so radical and dangerous, he supports the effort to cut $880 billion for Medicaid, devastating disabled children and those in nursing homes. Fine is so unhinged and anti-American, he supports the idea that Social Security is the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. He wants to cut $700 billion, stealing from your retirement. Randy Fine, unhinged, un-American.
I'm Josh.
Oh, Josh Weil. So he's the Democrat. My favorite part of this is the Chinese communist flag that's interspersed with no explanation. Yeah, but they're trying to get people that are, you know, in that area, right? Retirees.
This is what I find fascinating about this, because the mayor who won in that special election in Pennsylvania, he ran against Doge and Elon Musk and didn't mention Donald Trump's name. And that whole ad, if you look at that ad, all of those things tie back either to the Republican House or Elon Musk. And because, you know, the sort of vague notion that Musk is working for China right. In this instance. And I'm curious as to your take on this, because in running against Musk and the Republicans, everybody knows who empowered Musk and the Republicans on the Democratic side, but you're not sort of like ringing that, you know, Pavlov's dog, like Trump's in this race type of thing for his voters. Has anybody articulated that type of strategy? Cause I'm seeing that and it makes total sense to me.
No, that's very smart. And that's also the Democratic message in Wisconsin is Musk is trying to buy this. They don't mention the Trump thing. They think that the way Republicans are getting Trump and Musk in the race is not going to help the party. They think it excites their voters. But yes, in both cases, they want to emphasize Musk because Musk is less popular. Musk doesn't have that cult of personality. There are some young men who think Elon Musk is amazing and don't love Trump as much, but it's pretty marginal. So you're right. That is how they focus this, is that it's about these guys trying to rip you off. And they're very comfortable. Every Democrat's very comfortable saying these guys are trying to rip off your benefits to send the money back to the richest people in the world. Very populist message. maybe it doesn't sound super convincing from some Democrats. Maybe it'd be more convincing, as Bernie says, if they turned down all billionaire money. But right. That's the message everywhere. And in that Florida race, what is it now? It's March 31st. So I'm thinking 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was talking to Democrats who were annoyed that Josh Weil was raising all this money because they said, yeah, the best we can do here is the margin shrinks a bit. We really wish this money was going to other places. We wish this was going to people who could win special elections like this Lancaster County race, which they won, the state Senate race last week. They're a different two now because Fine ran such a bad campaign that they don't think they can win this, but they think it was the verge of being a single-digit, low single-digit five-point race that make Republicans scared. And they were really happy that at least Stefanik pulled out. But you're right. The messaging was not send a message against Donald Trump. I remember back in 2018, Andrew Gillum ran for governor of Florida, and during the primary, when it was just Democrats paying attention, in his ad, he said he supported impeaching Trump. They really thought bringing him into this race, he's so unpopular, that's a way to get over. They don't think that anymore. It is maybe Trump's approval rating goes down over the next 2 years, but they think it's attack the weaker people around him. That's the way you do it.
Well, I gotta also think that when you're talking about low turnout, which means, you know, high information and, highly engaged and high propensity to vote voters, they all know, like Elon, they don't think Elon Musk just showed up on his own. When you say Musk, they hear Trump. It's just that when you say Musk to less engaged Republican voters, they don't necessarily hear Trump.
Well, but if you say Trump, you have the risk of
that's what I'm saying. Engaging those
low income vote,
right? The low, not
low, low propensity. Sorry, yeah. But I do find it's like the ad, the way that Weil is framing them as extreme and focusing on Medicaid and Social Security feels unique as well. I mean, I guess it's also specific to Florida given the level of retirees there, but if they're talking about single-digit margins here between the two, Waltz won this district in November by 33 points.
Yes, so this should be a safe seat. It's Daytona Beach, and then there are retirees in the district. That is the messaging that has worked. But all special elections, every election until 2028, is going to have a smaller pool of voters than a presidential. Every special election, not to oversimplify it, but a little bit to oversimplify it, is about getting as many of your presidential voters out as possible. The new people joining, the new voters, you know, turning 18, et cetera, coming in, that is a smaller part of it. And so even in coastal, the Space Coast in Florida, if you got, let's say, 70% of the 2024 Democratic vote out and 40% of the Republican vote, that's how you win it. But you're not assuming you're converting more people. So this is going to Democrats and saying that. It's just that point Sam was making, that this is not saying cast a vote against Trump. It is saying here is something that I don't want to make up a poll number in this district, but given that Republicans have given up saying that we're going to cut Social Security, let's say that message is like an 80% message, even in a Republican district. Yeah, that's how you go for it. But it's a way to also tell your Democratic voters, this is an election coming up, please turn out. It's not quite fair. And Trump has posted about it. Trump said vote in this race, but
it just froze.
I lost Dave.
Trump's in Jr. I said you changed the circumstance. When I was there with Don Jr., Republicans wanted Trump to rally and to show up and to have something for Brad Schimmel, and that obviously never happened. He does get antsy if he thinks he might put skin in the game and be embarrassed. And Republicans had that's how they had their built the Wisconsin campaign, is we don't want to tell him get involved here because he might decide, oh, Republicans always lose those Wisconsin right. off your races. I'm going to look stupid if I do this. They're both being genteel about how they mentioned Trump, except in Wisconsin, this mail that's going to Republicans. Now, the TV ads you'll see say this liberal judge is horrible and she's going to let criminals out of jail, et cetera, et cetera. The mail that Republicans are getting is saying support Donald Trump. The message that you do for somebody who's just going to turn on the Brewers game is a little bit different than the message you do to somebody who's in your books saying they voted for Trump in 2024.
You can tell directly Republican voters, in other words, vote for Trump in this race. But if you start, they're afraid of wielding Trump as well, because that might motivate more people to come out to vote against Trump. I mean, this is what. All right. Yeah. Just lastly, what are the implications? What are the implications for legislation and candidates, Republicans in the House in particular, when a seat that was won by Waltz at 33 points comes in as, let's say, a 9-point race that the Democrat loses by 9 points? I mean, never mind wins. But like, what is that? What does that signal to them? How does that change their calculation going into 2026?
Well, you don't have Republicans who are that nervous about winning right now anywhere. The official, they'll change this. The official Republican position is that they are trying to expand this, Matt. That they, Mike Johnson has said this. They see seats that Trump won by, sorry, that Trump lost by less than 5 points as targets, and this is putting some ice water on that. That you're not going to hear Republicans say this is the year we're going to take back like Mikey Sherrill's seat in New Jersey or something, or this is the year we're going to beat Eugene Vindman. They're starting to get a little more realistic about where they can compete. Who is actually scared enough to change their votes because of this? Not that many Republicans compared to 8 years ago. There are really almost nobody in a. I think it's three people who are in seats, Republicans who are in seats that Harris won. They're already pretty open in speaking out against the party in a bad news cycle, like Brian Fitzpatrick in Pennsylvania and Don Bacon in Nebraska. These have been very hard for Democrats to beat because they run ahead of the party. And they're already trying to find votes they can break from the party on. They just keep voting with them on these spending bills because the premise of every spending bill this year, and this is pretty new, is that whatever you spend, Doge is not going to – don't worry about it. Doge is illegally going to – well, they don't say illegally, but Doge is – for until a court stops us, Doge is going to cut this. So you've got guys in competitive seats being much more confident they were 8 years ago in voting for Trump. But what happens if
– that's a massive failure of Chuck Schumer's, incidentally. Because that's going on, and they're getting their cake and eating it too. And Chuck Schumer just gave them a rubber stamp to do that. But putting that aside,
the only argument Schumer can make is that, but if we put in a shutdown, then they'd be doing the same thing. Russell would be saying, "Great,
yes," except for they wouldn't be able to. They'd either have to have their cake, or they'd have to eat it. They wouldn't get both. Yeah. That's the point.
Yeah, he sucked that down. Everyone's angry about how it went. But the next voting will happen on actual spending spending programs, outlays, which tax cuts are we going to extend? Is there a Republican who says, I'm politically kind of nervous about supporting this extension of tax cuts if it doesn't include, let's say, free IVF, which Trump ran on, or no tax on tips, which he ran on? If it does involve cutting Medicaid payments, am I worried about that? Am I worried if they talk about block granting Medicaid? You do have a couple people who might be nervous enough to not support that. And then what happens? Then you have to go back to the House drawing board and go to Democrats and say, can you fund this thing that doesn't go all the way? They have no Democrats playing ball with them. They kind of have Jerry Golden in Maine in the House. And when there is when the shutdown's on the table, they have John Fetterman, they have some senators. But which Republicans are confident that they could go to voters and defend any kind of entitlement cut? Not that many are worried about this, but let's say three of them are, four of them are. That's enough.
That's all you need. I mean, so
That would be enough in this climate. And
certainly,
they're going to replace these. They're going to actually have a little more wiggle room after these special elections because if Randy Fine wins, then their majority goes up and they can lose three votes and pass something. But that means four people. If Mike Lawler decides something's tough for him because he wants to run for governor of New York and he can't defend something that they're doing, that becomes a problem. Yeah, that's where they're trying to get back to. It's just that's normal politics, and normal politics do not exist under Doge and impoundment because the president can say, I'm signing this bill, but it's not real. If a Republican calls me and tells me not to spend this money, I won't spend it.
Dave Weigel, really appreciate your laying this out for us. The stakes are really big for these elections, much more so than I think people would have anticipated, you know, 6 months ago, certainly.
I think Elon's saying that, like, the judgment of history or something depends on Wisconsin.
The future of Western civilization.
We may not make it to Mars, after all, if this race in Wisconsin. But Dave Weigel, really appreciate it. We'll put a link to your Semaphore stuff. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, folks. I'm going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. I've got to skedaddle. I got an important appointment, but you will be the ship will be landed by Emma. Just don't freak out when we come back and all of a sudden I'm gone.
Sam may be back later in the show. We shall see.
This is no relationship to the names I was called on
right.
Friday.
He's definitely not interviewing my replacement.
People made a, Matt apparently, and I had sort of forgotten about this, went hard on the stop stuttering. Whatever, we're not going to get into that right now.
It's like legalized comedy. The left wanted to make comedy illegal, you know?
Yeah, no.
Folks, your support is what makes this show possible. You can become a member, join themajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free half free of commercials, but you also allow the show to survive and thrive. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee and hot chocolate. They're in Madison, Wisconsin. I know they're working on this election. And they have great coffee. You can get the Majority Report blend and others. 10% off. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Matt, Left Reckoning.
Yeah, tomorrow, Chip Gibbons of Defending Rights and Dissent on live at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We want to get to 50,000 subscribers.
See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, back. Back, back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare! What a
nightmare! Bring back DJ Dennerke.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dennerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank, okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black,
black Africans are back, back.
Come on.
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total pussy.
We are back, folks. It is the fun half of the Majority Report. I'll be piloting solo for a little bit until Sam comes back towards the end of the show, most of the show. I mean, I don't even know why he's bothering to come back.
Very strange decision, but you just get used to not questioning those things.
He has an appointment close by, but just, yeah, maybe go home after, I don't know.
Go have a coffee.
That's what I would do. But I guess that's not what, that's why I'm me. Brizzle, can we talk about Stephen Miller equals the banality of evil? Well, I don't know how banal he is, honestly. He's pretty explicit.
The nastiness, yes. The nasty freakishness of evil.
Dago Lefty, why does Musk sound like Anna Sorokin? Both, you know, very indistinguishable accents, I think. Although, I mean, I guess Elon's is South African, but he's kind of at supervillain level, I would say. Jester from Jersey, what'd you say?
I was going to say something not so nice about South African expats to our country, but I'll move it for later.
Get ready for a bunch more of them, because apparently this is official Trump administration policy to help all these white South Africans.
It's about white supremacy. It's about... you know, it's very consciously the way that they do these things. It's projection, right? Like the projection of you're the Soros, or you're trying to bring in refugees that will vote
right.
A way that you do. Like, how do you think that the white African farmers that are taking refuge from South Africa, like, how do you think they're going to vote? And this has been a conspiracy theory that has been. This is not new to Trump. Hunter S. Thompson famously in the 80s wrote about Ronald Reagan apparently threatening to do this.
Nate the Great says, stoked to hear the fun half. Just subbed today. Congrats. Oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you. Thank you for becoming a member. You enjoy my socialism. Can y'all please show the crackhead Barney interview with Zoran? Yes. I got a ton of enjoyment out of this over the weekend. Zoran Mondani is just running a phenomenal campaign. He has was the earliest, I think, of any mayoral candidate to basically max out on matching funds. So he said for the rest of this primary campaign, don't donate money to me. And he's just trying hard to work the ground game, because he does have some areas to make up. Cuomo is still ahead by a lot in polling. Now, we've seen how that can fail. I think this is much more what it feels like the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez race in 2018 versus Joe Crowley, where if you're able to turn out non-traditional voters, and if you're able to motivate people who aren't being picked up by polling, you can overcome those massive gaps. And Zoran is doing a phenomenal job in that way. So this woman, and by the way, I guess this is not safe for work. So a lot of language used here. She's a performance artist called Crackhead Barney. And she...
Is she the person that Piers Morgan booked once? I don't know.
But she's just kind of a New York City performance artist who comes up and interviews people in a bit of a provocative, satirical way. And a lot of politicians wouldn't have had the cool, calm demeanor that Zoran Mamdani does here, where he's able to get his message across effectively.
Thank you. Zoran, don't do this shit! Zoran, you're not the biggest fucking influencer in the city! What do you think about me storming the mayoral forums? Are you mad? Are you mad at me?
I'm not mad.
What do you think about it? You think I'm cloud chasing? You think I'm annoying? What do you think? Come on, give me a real answer.
The first time I was scared because I did not know who you were.
And now you know who I am.
And now I expect you at the forums.
Okay, good. And what are your other candidates saying? Are they hating me?
I think they also expect you at this point.
Oh, great. So, Zoran, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are you? Who the fuck? Because you just came out of nowhere, and we're like, I'm like, who is this guy? Who the fuck are you?
So I'm a state assembly member.
Okay.
I'm a state assembly member.
Okay.
I was elected in 2020, took office in 2021.
Okay.
And right now I am running on a platform to make New York City more affordable.
Okay, so what are you going to do for black people? What are you going to do for the niggas?
What we're seeing...
Black trannies, people like me, annoying, in their underwear, what are you going
to
do?
Look, every single person in this city deserves to afford to call this city their home.
And okay.
What we've seen in a crisis of inequality, where one in four New Yorkers are in poverty, where 500,000 children are going to bed hungry,
Okay. It
has a disproportionate impact on black New Yorkers. From 2010 to 2019, we saw nearly 20% decline in the population of black children and teenagers.
Okay.
And that's because of how expensive we've made this city. We are losing the fabric of what we love about this city.
Okay.
And we need to make sure that for black New Yorkers who want to raise their kids here,
yep.
This is the most affordable and easiest place to do so, because right now,
mm-hmm.
That's not the case.
Okay, Jordan, would you fuck me? Are you married?
Yes.
Who are you married to? A white woman, Latina, Arab?
She's Arab.
And what are you? Are you Arab, Indian? What are you? You look ambiguous. You look weird. You look weird. What the fuck are you?
I'm an Indian, Ugandan, New Yorker.
Okay, so you're African American. So would you claim the African-American status like Elon Musk?
No, I would not.
Why not? You're African, but you're African, right? I knew you grew up there. Your middle name is Kwame.
I am. I'm proud to be Ugandan.
Okay.
But I think that is misleading.
And whether
misleading.
Indian,
all right, I think we get the gist. I just wanted to get to that part where he said, I think that's misleading. Handled that really well. You know, she's a character, very New York character. And I liked getting to know him a little bit better. And I didn't know that about his background. But also, it's a fun clip to kind of talk about the overall story about what happened over the weekend in this race. I just sent some footage if we want to play this a little bit. Over the weekend, the Working Families Party endorsed four New York City mayoral candidates, including Zohran Mamdani, but also Adrian Adams, Brad Lander, and Zellner Myrie. This is important because in the 2021 mayoral primary, there was not a lot of strategy, and there was an effort at the 11th hour, basically, to coalesce behind Maya Wiley, but it was way too late, and Eric Adams had already kind of taken the mantle and won over different constituencies and ended up being the candidate, and we also saw how disastrous that was. Why I'm a fan of this strategy is that it's making clear what voters who are opposed to particularly Andrew Cuomo winning in this primary need to do. And they're using this acronym DREAM. Don't rank Eric or Andrew for mayor. And this is really important for people to understand. In ranked choice voting, to maximize the efficacy of your ballot, you have to fill out all five slots. But if you don't want Andrew Cuomo to win, and Eric Adams to a lesser degree, I think he's a little bit cooked, but for argument's sake, leave them both off. And just for, you know, the sake of the city, leave them both off. To maximize the strength of your ballot, you have to fill out all five slots, but not with either of those two candidates. So with Zohran Mamdani being the clear front runner of the four WFP endorsed candidates, makes it so that it's less likely, if the word gets out here, that somebody might rank Zohran 1 and then Andrew Cuomo 2 just based on name recognition, or Eric Adams 2 or 3, whatever, which would strengthen Cuomo's count in the second round in ranked choice voting. But here's a bit of the rally over the weekend with these four candidates walking arm in arm at a press conference.
All right, we're living the dream. Living the dream.
That's good. So you see there, I think this is really good for Zohran, selfishly. Obviously, rank him first. And then some combination of the WFP slate, and also Ramos is a candidate that you can throw in there. But it's really important for people to understand not to rank Andrew Cuomo at all. You may know him by name recognition, and you may rank him fifth out of five, but don't do that. Don't rank him at all.
You may not do that.
Yeah, or please don't. But please do fill out all five slots. I hope that's clear for people.
It's interesting, you know, I'm in the tank for Zohran. It's interesting that they only named four when there's five spots available, and Ramos didn't get that, who I would have assumed would have gotten a nod there. I wonder what... I'm not super interested, but I am vaguely curious about what happened there.
I'm vaguely curious as well, but, you know, we shall see. some reporting will likely come out about it. Teacher Dan, 20, please keep spreading the word about how to keep Cuomo off the ballot sooner or later. He'll start blaming Soros too, I bet. The Milrein, Emma, what you're describing is bullet voting in the non-ranked choice context. For example, if you could only vote up to two, then you would, but you want one to win, you only vote one and you undervote the ballot. All right, I'm not exactly sure what that means, but my point earlier still stands in terms of the strategy going into this race. Nassau County spokesperson, did you guys see New York WFP endorsements? Adrian Adams over Ramos, blah, blah, blah. Yep. I'm a fan of Working Families Party. I think they could strengthen their case by, you know, say, leaving. I think both Chuck Schumer and Gillibrand were they on the WFP slot this time around?
Probably Gillibrand.
But, you know, with this kind of resurgence of energy within the base, I could see them moving away from, you know, broadening who's allowed under their umbrella just to kind of strengthen the party. I could see them being more selective in the coming years. Will from Indiana, he's so good at this, even though he may not win this go around. I'm praying he does, of course. I think he's setting the blueprint not only for himself, but future Democratic, Socialist, and left-wing candidates, as well as Kat Abu-Ghazala running in Illinois' 9th district. It's clear the playbook is getting set before our eyes, especially dealing with things like AIPAC and fascism. One of the few things that gives me hope in this time, left is best. Yes, exactly. Will from Indiana, exactly right. We're going to open the phone lines in just a sec, but let's do this here. Elon Musk has been outed as a fake gamer, right? Matt, can you explain this to me as somebody who's not familiar with gaming?
So maybe a month or so ago, Elon Musk was sort of busted for hiring people to level up his characters in, I think, Diablo or some other type of game like that. And basically got exposed because he tried to do a stream and people watched him play for like 20 minutes and were like, this is very clearly not one of the top players in the world.
Right. Like the way he was playing made no sense.
It was not optimized. He wasn't
right.
Like,
given his level, he would not be so clueless about how to play the game.
And this is after, like, a few years ago, his Elden Ring character didn't even have, like, sort of replenishing flasks that everybody had. Like, very obvious things that, like, if you actually played this more than just, like, oh, I'm a rich guy, I'm going to do, like, a little bit of gaming. For some reason, he likes to say he works 70 hours a week, but also is the world's leading gamer. And you can't do both of those things.
What do you mean? For some reason, it's because he is a complete psychopath liar, but also he has a view of himself like that he is above humanity, that he is some sort of elevated creature. That's why he thinks...
You're the richest man in the world already, bud.
Right.
Like, you don't need to be on
a
leaderboard.
But he's a eugenicist. He wants to, like, have his... be measuring people's skulls. He genuinely thinks that him spreading his DNA to all of his sons, except for he has a daughter who we're about to play, is helping humanity because he thinks that his DNA is so superior. And these are... not new views.
No, they're Epstein thoughts.
They are old, extreme, far-right racist views that motivates him, and a lot of ketamine as well. But what was fun is that Hassan Piker had his daughter on the stream. His daughter is trans and has been open about her disdain for her biological father. And she revealed a little bit more information about some of his gaming lies. Here she is on with Hassan.
Like narcissism, and he really wants to be liked.
Okay, people always think he wants to be Tony Stark. No, he wants to be the the CEO from Ready Player One. He literally wants to be that.
Oh,
he made us
so
read
creepy.
Ready Player One when we got in trouble. True story.
Okay, Ready Player One CEO is who he wants to be. Ben Mendelsohn is Nolan Sorrento, the CEO of Innovative Online Industries.
I hate that fucking movie. I mean, it's a, like, fun movie to watch, but if you think about it for more than 5 seconds, you're like, the messaging of this movie and, like, the motifs of it are, like, very bad. We should not be worshipping CEOs. What the fuck?
I have not watched Ready Player One. Yeah. I've only seen parts of it, I'm pretty sure. Wait, is that that's a lightsaber dude movie, or is it, that's a different one, right? That's the one with Ryan Gosling in it, chat.
I don't remember. I saw it.
I'm asking chat.
I'm way more than a year ago. So like,
remember, this conversation is taking place in front of like 40,000 people. No, that's Free Guy.
Keep forgetting that. Hello, people. We're in the little time wrong.
No, this is a different. Yeah, this is a different movie. My bad. Ready Player One.
Sorry, guys. We got to find the right part where this is being discussed. By the way, her name is Vivian Wilson. She came out as trans in 2020, and here we go. This is the part I was referring to.
For a Ubisoft game.
I can't expose something that I think is really fucking funny, which is the fact that I suspect when I was like 12, he was bronze in Overwatch, and me and my twin weren't. And he would try to constantly get us to play ranked with him, and I'm like 90% sure it was just because we could carry him. And I was like a 12-year-old Hanzo main who was like barely in silver. He was a bronze Torbjorn main. He was fucking dog shit. Awful. Like, god awful. So, no, I don't believe the fucking... He's like, I am a pro Path of Exile, whatever the fuck. Like, no, the fuck you are not. This is so cringe.
Now, what's funny about Vivian saying this, and go back to Emma. Russ, now you gotta click her. Click the solo. Yeah. Is that Vivian isn't like this massive gamer that's just doing gaming all the time. Earlier on in the interview, it's revealed that Vivian doesn't even know what a Steam Deck is, which is something gamers would know. So Elon Musk's daughter, who
was a casual video game
12-year-old who Elon used to do better in multiplayer games.
Isn't that the value of having children? They're there to be your supplicants in the video game space.
Now, that part is sort of the part that's made a lot of news in like the gaming circles. This part is even more interesting to me. They're talking about Elon's reputation as like this guy who's going to save everybody. I just want to play a little bit of this because it shows how they play this old YouTuber who was really into Musk. And Vivian basically says something that, you know, we've been saying here, which is that the Mars stuff is a giant hoax for marketing purposes.
Oh, of course.
You still have practical electric vehicles now, but wait, the power plants will still have to
be. I want to get banned off Facebook.
So, well, we have another company that's more solar powered people's houses than any other. But wait, what if it's already too late to curb climate change and the planet is doomed? Oh, wow, he's made another company that is single handedly pushing humanity towards colonizing.
Don't you always?
Oh, my God, not colonizing Mars. That's not happening, people. It's a marketing scheme. Do you know how long it would take to colonize Mars? Do you know how long it would take to terraform that thing? It's a marketing scheme that everyone somehow fell for. This is my native language, I promise. That everyone somehow fell for, despite being like debunked by a Google search. Like, are you serious?
No, I do think that we are progressively getting dumber and dumber as a society. It's one of the things that I yell about quite a bit. But this was, I mean, you're nailing a lot of the reasons why I was always initially annoyed with Elon Musk from the jump because of all of this stuff, where I was like, this is not happening. Like, I remember having these conversations with like the donut media guys who were like car guys, right? And I was like, on paper, I'm supposed to love this person because like, this is supposed to be like a green energy focused person who, but he's not exactly. I'm saying like on paper, he's supposed to be like leading the charge on renewable energy and electric vehicles. And yet he's such a douchebag.
10 years that facade worked. God.
Yeah.
So there it is.
And we know that, by the way, this is just like Elon Musk is a cool hat, Hassan, love it. Shout out to the Knicks. This is how Elon Musk makes money, is he overpromises and underdelivers. And it is the model that Silicon Valley has perfected. There are some Silicon Valley companies that produce actual products, and then they're a little bit less grandiose in the way that they present and market themselves to investors. But Elon Musk is just the Theranos lady who ended up being successful and didn't get caught. Like, he's constantly promising to shareholders technology that doesn't end up coming about. Part of why Tesla's stock price keeps tanking and why their sales are plummeting in places like Europe, which is a huge problem for him, because if he doesn't hit a certain threshold of sales, he can't sell the carbon credits that he uses to really make money with this company to polluters who go over their allotted kind of carbon quota. That's how he makes money. But if he can't augment that, or I guess basically have enough sales to say, oh, I'm reducing emissions by X amount, then the excess credits that he can sell to other companies, that will be moot in Europe. But he hasn't put out a new model of a Tesla that isn't a Cybertruck in many, many years. And in part, that was because he promised, and this was in Walter Isaacson's biography of him, he basically promised that they were going to have self-driving cars and technology available so they don't have to worry about making a Tesla that is accessible to everyday people for them to buy and newer models. Don't worry, the robo-taxi is just around the corner. And yeah, they've been testing on U.S. streets and sometimes actually just like killing people, but there is no commercially available robo-taxi right now. This is the Theranos lady. He just was more successful at it. And like the Theranos lady, Elizabeth Holmes, I'm just remembering her name, who tricked Henry Kissinger, Elon Musk has tricked a lot of really wealthy, powerful power players in our government. And
Barack Obama privatized NASA to this guy.
Yep. Yep.
And here's actually just a little bit more. This is another good thing of Vivian reacting just in just such like disgust at people glazing Elon, which I just love.
Let's see how this anything watching anything from the year 2015 is always going to be cringe regardless. But yeah, Let's see how timely this is. Like, let's see if this holds up.
Today, I'm going to show you one of those people, someone who is basically a real life Iron Man, but less of a douche.
I'm killing
fusion reactor.
I love her just not being able to take somebody calling him a real life Iron Man.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know that's how he thinks of himself, right?
Yeah.
He saw the Robert Downey Jr. character in Iron Man and thought that could be his persona.
And what's so amazing to me is like how freakish Elon looks here, because Vivian could not be more personable. I imagine she's going to be on Hassan's stream more. She seemed to enjoy herself. That Elon calls her his dead son is despicable.
Oh my God.
We are taking family values advice from some of the sickest people, most sick in the head in world history, which is what Elon Musk is.
You've said this before, he is not a disappointed father. He is a disappointed customer because we have no evidence that Elon Musk has ever had sex, by the way. These, 15 kids that he has sired were all born male.
IVF, biologically. You can, I didn't know that through IVF you determined.
You can gender select if you have enough money. Although, you know, I don't know necessarily what the status is of that technology, but it's also funny because the right is obsessed with the idea that IVF is somehow unnatural, or abortion is somehow a crime against God, or...
Well, some of them are.
The idea that surrogacy is, right? I mean, if you're a gay couple and you have the means to use a surrogate and Dave have Rubin. A baby like that, like Dave Rubin, they think that's just, like, disgusting and wrong. But when Elon Musk kind of develops a harem of women that are willing to carry his seed so that he can repopulate the earth in his image. I mean, it's deeply sick and weird.
There should be an alert out for anybody who has IVF like 8 times and does the same gender each time. That's just bizarre behavior.
Well, you can't. There was a documentary on Netflix about one guy that fathered like hundreds of children, and he did so throughout the globe in different continents and sold his sperm in that way. And it's actually a deeply dangerous thing to do, because if it's a sperm donor in particular and these kids don't know their father's identity, there are studies that show that sometimes you're drawn to people that look like you. And he was doing it in little communities in areas of Europe, that they may actually accidentally have a sexual relationship with their sibling. And that this guy, but this guy, he was also, you know, he was a bit of a nativist, interested in or maybe nativist isn't the right word. It's not the right word. It's a Monday. He like Elon Musk,
natalist.
Jesus. Thank you, Matt. Thank you. He's a natalist. But these are people that fundamentally usually are white supremacists too. At the end of the day, you don't see a lot of non-white natalists. Oh, yeah. Matt's going to call into the phones here, and then we will take some phone calls. Morpheus says it's a miracle that Viv turned out to be so cool with these psychotic Musk genes. The apple ended up in a completely different orchard in this case. Well, you know, I'm not somebody that necessarily thinks that genes are fully determinative of people's personalities. Although, yes, as Biflo says, I think you mean natalist. Yeah, I think biological determinism.
She was raised far away from Elon.
Is often a pretty scary road to go down. I mean, there are things that can be passed down, like mental illness can be passed down. Alcoholism and addiction can be passed down. But I do think that, like, biological determinism is often a shorthand for pseudoscience and some racism that people engage in often, or bigotry more broadly. It can also lead to ethnic supremacist views.
I'd also add, anybody who is simultaneously attacking Medicaid, which covers 40% of all births in this country, 50% of all rural births, and saying they're pro-natalist is lying. They are eugenicist. They want certain types of birth and not others.
Not others, exactly. All right, guys, opening up the phone line, 646-257-3920. Let's do another clip while we get people into the phone lines here. Let's do 8. So CNN interviewed a self-identified MAGA junkie. This woman is named Jennifer Pigott, lives in West Virginia. She was fired from her job as a probationary employee in the Treasury Department for poor performance. She was a huge fan of Donald Trump, voted for him, etc., but is the latest casualty in DOJ's gutting of the federal government. Here she is explaining to CNN why she now regrets that vote.
This flag used to hang there.
This was the flag Jennifer Pigott proudly hung outside her home during campaign 2024.
We had the flag. I had the shirt. I was a MAGA junkie.
A MAGA junkie who thought her government job would be safe with Donald Trump in office. She was wrong.
I cried. It's scary, you know? It's a really scary thing. And I was embarrassed.
He's a good boy.
Pigott was abruptly fired last month from the Treasury Department's Bureau of Fiscal Service, based here in Parkersburg, West Virginia. The reason given for the firings of 125 probationary employees at the Bureau? Poor performance.
I had my last review on the 31st of January, and I had the highest rating that you can get on a review, less than 21 days before I was terminated for my performance.
You voted for Donald Trump.
I did.
Do you regret that vote?
Yes, I do. To cut the knees out of the working class Americans just doesn't make sense to me. I expected more from President Donald Trump.
Since speaking out, Pigott says she's received death threats and her home has been egged.
If you could say anything to President Trump now, what would you say?
I expected better from you. I really did. I expected that you would do what was right and cut waste and fraud and all of those things that you promised us before we elected you in office, but you're not doing that. You're creating a disaster, and I don't know what America is going to look like if this continues.
Well, what the Trump administration wants to do and what DOGE and Elon Musk want to do is to funnel federal workers back into the private sector. there has been a persistent, from their perspective, lack of labor discipline over the past few years because unemployment has been at such a low level. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that people's standard of living is good. It doesn't mean that, actually, because we have price gouging on groceries by corporations that took advantage of naturally occurring inflation and elongated it so they could have record profits. And we're seeing that in paperwork as they continue to claim that it's naturally occurring inflation or shoplifting or something like that. They want to discipline the labor force, and taking a lot of public employees, putting them back into the public sector, increases unemployment and increases scarcity. And so this is what they're trying to speed run here. It's one part of what Trump is trying to do. And the other part is that if you shrink the federal workforce and the number of people that are going to get in your way when you try to unilaterally make decisions, because he has authoritarian impulses, it's a lot easier when you have fewer federal workers in your way. Because we did hear anecdotal reports in the first Trump term that there were people who were working to slow some of his most insane impulses from within the federal government, because these are people who have dedicated their life to public service. And that's the overarching theme of this, too. The Trump administration doesn't respect or value public work, because this is an administration that embodies all of what we discuss with, like, the hallmarks of the thrashing about of late stage capitalism. They believe that all public work is essentially for suckers, and they're going to put in their privatizing goons into wherever, whatever part of the administration they need to infect. So, like, Elon Musk can, I don't know, have his SpaceX guys keep polluting our atmosphere for profit.
The only people that should live a middle-class existence are people who are supplicants to capitalists in the private sector. But the actual truth is that we have never had a middle class built by capitalists being so generous with wages that it creates a middle class. We have a middle class because of the gigantic interventions in the economy during the New Deal era that caused a massive sort of crunch basically, like, rising of wages and for working people as opposed to the wealthy. And yeah, we're not going to. I mean, the problem is, like, with this woman, and I feel badly for her. Yeah, like, I think I do feel the need to say anybody whose first instinct is to point and laugh isn't here for politics. They're here for some other personal reason. And I think those people should, you know, take a seat. This is the power of propaganda. Like, the things that Republican voters are told that they want aren't real. They're not real. And Sagar and Jetty would do his Republicans who follow that show a favor by finally admitting that actually this mass deportation fever dream that I've been selling people, that we've been telling people is popular, it's actually not even feasible. It's not feasible to do in a realistic way. And let alone, like, that they want everybody gone as opposed to just violent criminals, right? Like all this stuff is lies. It's all lies just to get them elected. There's not really fraud in Social Security to any significant extent. There's not when we look at fraud and who's defrauding the government, Harry Truman did a very famous thing during World War II about going around and looking into fraud. Guess what? He wasn't looking into the bureaucracies themselves. He was looking into contractors who provided things like aircraft makers selling crappy planes to, like, flight schools and stuff like that. Like, yeah. That's what this actually is, which is to say, Elon Musk would have been one of the people that Harry Truman would have investigated. He wouldn't have been put in charge of the fucking investigations by the government.
No, that's exactly right. And the other thing that's annoying about this whole federal workforce, unelected career bureaucrats talking point, which is hilarious given exactly what Matt just said, is that, you know, Elon Musk is completely unelected and is acting as a government actor without any of the processes that would be involved in democracy. But it's that they paint these public workers as if they are Washington creatures. But you see there, she's in West Virginia, the states with the highest proportion of federal workers per capita. Maryland and Virginia are in the top three. That's obvious. That seems, you know, that makes sense. Suburbs of Washington, D.C. But Hawaii is number two. Lots of military personnel there. Alaska is four. Wyoming is five. Some veterans affairs there. But also fish and wildlife. That's a part of the federal government. New Mexico, then. Oklahoma after that. Oklahoma is... I saw in the, I kept repeating this statistic back when the Doge firings were at the outset, because it just struck me that the federal government is the number one employer in the, well, this is Missouri now, but in the Kansas City metro area. And they employed like 30,000 people. And that's why we were seeing some of these town halls. These are people all throughout the country who are going to be affected by this. And that's part of the point. They're doing shock therapy on our own population so that they can remake the government in the way that they see fit, more authoritarian, more fascistic, more in favor of billionaires. And you do that by creating pain, and they're admitting that it's going to be pain, whether it's through Doge or with these tariffs. Trump told NBC News over the weekend that he couldn't care less. That's the quote. Couldn't care less. That prices are going to go up for vehicles, for both used and new auto purchases for people in this country. I mean, it's easy not to care less when you're a multimillionaire or a billionaire and none of this matters to you. But tariffs are a compounding, regressive tax, like the sales tax, that is disproportionately going to hurt people the lower your income is. And that's part of what they are attempting to do. This is their agenda. All right, with that, let's take a call or two. Calling from a 412 area, who's this, where you're calling from?
Hello, this is Nick from Pittsburgh.
Nick from Pittsburgh, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm not the Nick from Pittsburgh that I am, so there's a few of us out here in Pennsylvania. But
gotcha.
I wanted to talk about Greenland.
Yeah.
Because I think it's more of a strategic military acquisition than anything to do with minerals.
Agreed.
On the island. Okay. Yeah, because in the first Trump administration, Mike Pompeo was talking about opening up the Northwest Passage. And that's like a thing people try to look for in like the 1800s to go like over Canada to get to the Pacific.
And you know why there's going to be an opening up there now? North Pole? Oh, he just dropped off, Nick. All right, well, I can't leave the folks hanging here. If you want to get back in the phone lines, Nick, I'll pick up your call again. But it's because the ice is melting and it might open up trade routes over the North Pole. But in terms of military positioning, it's because it's the shortest route for a nuclear weapon to go to Russia or to China if you can go over the North Pole. And so that's why Greenland has that strategic value. And China and Russia are both trying to vie for control of the area, too. I don't see him.
And then I think about something.
Hey, like, sorry, caller. You're we lost you for a little bit there. I don't know if you could hear us or not, but you, where do you want to reset, Emma?
Yeah, did you hear me?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
Long story short, I basically said that it's also because the Greenland, if you leave your nukes there, which I mean, the United States probably does. Like, we already have a major military base there, one of the biggest in the world in Greenland. It's the shortest route for a nuclear weapon to get to Russia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, like, everything already comes over the North Pole.
Yep.
So, like, we already have stuff in Montana. So, yeah. But then, I don't know if you heard, like,
Alaska has that strategic value as well.
Yeah. So you've bookended, like, the Arctic there. But, yeah. So I don't know how much where I cut out, so I don't want to repeat anything. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Basically, are you sure? You cut out, I think, when I was talking, so I'm not necessarily sure if you, if you want to get your point across.
That's basically it. Okay. You know, I guess, like, my main point was that it will provide strategic value in the future, and the military's come to that conclusion. And, you know, I think that's just more, I just wanted to mention more that that's the primary reason as opposed to anything to do with minerals. Yeah.
It's old school imperialism, too, like, in that way. I mean, I think minerals are a good kind of knock-on or secondary benefit, right?
I mean, also just land. This isn't to the military thing, but it's absolutely part of it, which is that Peter Thiel and all of his libertarian techno buddies have been looking for an island to start their little techno utopia on for a while. They're buying land in Greenland. The people linked to Peter Thiel, they will be the sort of, what do you want to call it, the founders? If that purchase does go through, I hope it doesn't.
For the network state. Appreciate the call, Nick.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks. Calling from a...
It would appear that Trump has named a Thiel associate, Ken Howery, as ambassador to Denmark.
Well, there you go. Calling from a 757 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Cody from Norfolk, Virginia.
Cody from Norfolk, Virginia. What's on your mind?
Hey, it's kind of a fun call. I didn't know if you guys have noticed, but Michael Knowles, they tried to release a... video on YouTube dunking on Sam. It was in reference to the guy who's saying that government agencies pay taxes.
Right. What did he say?
And the comments are basically all just destroying on Knowles. They were just making fun of him, thinking that, you know, it was the dunk on him instead of Sam.
That's so funny.
You guys should check it out because it's a really good video. But all the comments are like destroying Michael Knowles for thinking that it was a dunk on Sam. So it's good stuff.
That's so good. Why did he pick that one? I thought they were all picking the Christian nationalist guy.
Yeah, it was good stuff all around. But I didn't want to take up too much time. I just thought it was funny.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too.
So, yeah, let's do this here a little bit. This is the first comment. Haha, Sam Cedar got destroyed. You are either completely ignorant about politics, xenophobic, or you just a propaganda tool, regardless of which you sure don't seem to mind looking like a complete idiot. So let's go to the top comments first. Figure out how to get us in there. Go to maybe wide.
I've never heard of Cedar, but that debate made the conservatives look so embarrassingly stupid that I've legitimately seen conservatives accidentally agreeing with Sam and thinking he was the conservative in the debate. Top comment. Keep going.
Insisting that Sam Cedar got destroyed has the dude who insists government agencies pay taxes energy LMAO.
If you watch that and thought Sam Cedar came out looking bad, I would like to know what drugs you're on because they sound wild. Should we take a listen to a little of what Knowles has to say here? I mean, just cold into it.
Where to go?
He spent 21 minutes on it. Maybe go to the part with the guy about the government agencies if you can find. That there. Here we
okay.
All right, well, either way, we'll check that out tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll watch it.
Colt Dog, I just wish we would stop talking about this shit and talk about the cost of living, but Trump's also not worried about costs going up.
Trump is about to cause a tremendous amount of material pain in this country.
Right. Cole from Little Rock. Exactly right, Emma. When people are hating on the government, they don't realize that my dad, who works for the Forest Service, is the government. Most of our government are people like us, and they've fooled us.
This is not just a Trump thing. This is not just a Republican thing. This die was cast when Bill Clinton spent all the 90s farting around having affairs and saying the era of big government is over and my corporate friends are going to be here to fill in the gap. The government is in our communities. It is a major part of it. The people that are working it are part of our communities. They're some of the best among us, and they should be treated with respect. Even Pidgeot or whatever her name was from West Virginia who voted for Trump. Like those types of people, those types of jobs, they're good jobs. One, even from a like self-interested perspective, your community almost certainly benefits from the government creating jobs there and hiring people.
Yeah.
Because guess what they do with that money? They don't give it to George Soros. They spend it at restaurants and on people to build homes and stuff.
let's do 9 here. Donald Trump was asked the question, you know, the question that has made left-wingers lose their minds. They're so dumb, they can't answer the simple question that documentary filmmaker and researcher Matt Walsh has been going around the globe asking, what is a woman? Now, in his research, as exposed accidentally by Joe Rogan, he kind of like didn't seem to know the number of kids who were on hormone therapy or who were trans in this country and overestimated it by like, how many times would like a few thousand to a few million would be? I'm not sure if I could do that math off the top of my head, but many, many, many multiples, probably hundreds of multiples over the actual figure. So he forgot to do that part of the research. You know, the core fundamental premise of his documentary was undercut within around 30 seconds of sitting down with Joe Rogan, who I gotta say is not even someone who's a difficult interviewer. But Trump here has asked the question, because conservatives have built their ideology on how this trans mind virus is infecting all of us, he probably has a pretty good answer for what a woman is. Let's see what he has to say.
Thank you so much for women by, first of all, keeping men out of women's sports, and you platform so many.
That was an easy one. It was crazy.
You platform so many great women, like your chief of staff, Susie Wiles. You also have Caroline Leavitt doing a great job as press secretary. Now Alina will be joining as well. Since Democrats seem to struggle answering this question, I wanted to ask you, what is a woman, and why is it important that we understand the difference between men and women?
Well, it's sort of easy to answer for me, because a woman is somebody that can have a baby under certain circumstances. She has a quality. A woman is a person who's much smarter than a man, I've always found. A woman is a person that doesn't give a man even a chance of success. And a woman's a person that in many cases has been treated very badly, because I think that what happens with this crazy issue of men being able to play in women's sports is just ridiculous and very unfair to women and very demeaning to women. And that.
Go back just a sec, yeah.
With this crazy issue of men being able to play in women's sports is just ridiculous and very unfair to women and very demeaning to women. And that's got to be about a 94%. I read today it was a 94% issue. And the other day, I watched a congressman, a Democrat congressman, fighting for the fact that men should be allowed to compete essentially in women's sports. And I say, I hope they keep that going, because they'll never win another election. That's a big deal. But women are basically incredible people, do so much for our country. And we love our women, and we're going to take care of our women.
Yeah. We love them so much that we can't keep our hands off of them. We can't keep our hands off of them. We love them so much. We just got to grab it.
We love them so much, but we got to stop them from doing all these willy-nilly late-term abortions, killing kids after they're born, because they're not really trustworthy. Okay?
I mean, Donald Trump shows his love. I mean, you just have to read E. Jean Carroll's testimony about how much he loves women. He loves women so much that he was integral in getting Andrew Tate back into this country, an alleged trafficker of women and a misogynist influencer. He loves women so much that he appointed Pete Hegseth, who has no experience, to be the Secretary of Defense when he had a police report and a credible rape accusation against him. He loves women so much that he just had Conor McGregor at the White House for some reason, I guess just to show how much he loves women. You know, Conor McGregor has been also accused of rape, and the woman who was the accuser, the alleged victim, had her tampon pushed up so far into her that it had to be removed by a doctor. That's how much Donald Trump and the Republicans love protecting women. Apparently, a woman is somebody who can only have a baby under certain circumstances. What are the circumstances? Are you a woman once you hit menopause? Or is it that you had the capacity to have a baby prior to that? Are you a woman if you basically have a hysterectomy? Even if you are of child-rearing age, does it count if you were forced to have a hysterectomy early on in your life because of a medical issue? Does she get to still be a woman in his instance, in his viewpoint? The point of this, though, is that there is no real set answer. We know that there's a certain section of...
Matt Walsh didn't provide one in his movie. He was asked by one of his... sort of subjects to say, well, what do you say it is? And he declined to do it in the movie that we're doing this because actually it's way more complicated. Do you think somebody like Buck Angel is, are you going to call Buck Angel a woman?
Right. Right. I mean, that's an example that's just, I think, obvious to people. I was seeing stand up of a trans man who was talking about how they were a soccer player in college, but on the it was before he transitioned, and just some of the awkwardness of playing in rec leagues with other men and having to say, like, I played soccer in college, but I'm keeping this other secret to myself. And you never hear about how trans men are polluting men's sports. And I want this to be clear to people. It's because so much of conservative fundamentalism and right-wing thought stemming from Christian fundamentalism, really, for the most part in this country, is about controlling women. And they're fixated on the idea of women's sports because they are unable to control who counts as a woman and who doesn't. You could just go back to the Obama years and you see the memes that your right-wing uncle was sharing about Michelle Obama and how she's actually secretly a man. And you can see how race intersects with this as well, in addition to how Imani Khalif, who is a woman, who has been a girl, raised as a girl, a woman her entire life, was called a man repeatedly, over and over again, falsely by right-wing media, because she didn't necessarily fit their standard for what a woman is. And what is a woman, and what they can't say, is that a woman is somebody that I find basically sexually desirable, and somebody who is fit to carry my seed. And femininity is defined in their worldview by them, by men, by their vision of what a woman should be. And why trans women are such a threat to them is that they decide that femininity and womanhood can be defined by actual women. And it's not necessarily about if the woman is fit to be my wife or whatever it is. And it's also why they fixate on trans sports, is because they can use their, they feel that this is their masculine urge to protect these little white girls from these scary men. And it's once again something that reinforces their masculinity, because God, if I can't define femininity as the superior sex, obviously, then what about masculinity? That's what's scary to them, because their masculinity, like white supremacy, whatever, is defined by hierarchy. When Trump talks about how women are smarter than men, I mean, give me a break. The first thing he says about a woman when he doesn't like her, who's a Democrat, is that she's a dumbass or something like that. I mean, Kamala Harris, we saw how that went down. This is what it is. It taps into a fundamental fear about them not being able to control women and womanhood.
I just want to play a little bit of this Jose Not a J video. This is how the talentless Matt Walsh became popular. Just goes into a little bit of that question in case people want a little bit of a remedial lesson here.
Reducing sex to one of those two things, and then explains with more examples and commentary from various scientific sources how the many complications of human sex make it difficult to place it in a binary. Here's an excerpt from the article that sums it up well.
When someone states that, quote, an organism's sex is defined by the type of gamete, sperm, or ova it has the function of producing, unquote, and argues that legal and social policy should be, quote, rooted in properties of bodies, unquote, they are not really talking about gametes and sex biology. They are arguing for a specific political and discriminatory definition of what is quote-unquote natural and quote-unquote right for humans based on a false representation of biology.
And he gives several historical examples of what that discrimination has often looked like. It's a pretty good article that offers a primary for why sex shouldn't be understood as a binary and focuses on how sex is used by political actors to discriminate against others.
Yep. It's so much more complicated than this. There's a 1-2% of the population is intersex. That alone shows that there's no way to binarily define womanhood and manhood.
Yep.
And that has been the case.
Everyone's known that
around the world. There are different cultures that have third genders.
Yeah. But we genocide those, so who cares?
Well, right. They're not, you know, as superior as we are here.
Of the West, strip malls and, you know,
and cryptocurrency. Donald Trump being president, yeah. The superiority with which we operate is so obvious. Bingus, the sports argument is a winning one with older generations, even if they are left-leaning. All the old women in my life hate Trump. They are against trans women in sports. Not sure what it stems from, but it's a right-wing winner for older women. Well, you should ask them if they voted based on that, because that's really all that matters in terms of the politics of it. And either way, we shouldn't cave on this issue an inch regardless, because it's about showing strength, as Sam said, I think, on Friday about this. Being strong and wrong, even though it's not wrong, is better than being weak and looking like you're just following the polling. We stand up for our trans brothers and sisters in every instance, including when they want to realize their dreams as in participating in sports and in other areas of society, because it's not just going to stop with sports. They start with sports because of that issue.
It's based on hysterical misrepresentations. Yeah. The fairness issue is one that's accounted for when these by trans activists, you know. And the thing about it is, like, if we go into, okay, we need to make sure that a trans person never does extremely well if they transition into sport. Like, the problem is, even in women's sports, domination happens. There are women who are very physically stronger than others, and those women are going to be targeted as trans. The very second you open the door to this, you're going to have accusation after accusation after accusation. And you know what that leads to? We have to check genitals. Yep. We have to check medical records. We have to check all of this stuff. It is going to fundamentally, and this is something that only like the bigots care about, because they don't care about what happens to trans people on this. It's also going to victimize a lot of little girls too.
Yep, exactly right.
Assigned female at birth.
Let's take a call here. Hey, it's like, I just checked, it's like 70-ish degrees out. I'm dying under these lights. Is there any way we could turn on the AC? Let's take a call here. Calling from a 647 area code. Who's this, where you're calling from?
This is me.
This is you.
This is Janessa from Toronto.
What's your name again, sorry?
Janessa.
Janessa from Toronto. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Just side note on the IVF thing with Elon Musk. He does have a couple of other girls aside from Vivian. I do know. I think he has one twin girl with Grimes. But I think they're probably going overseas to select their children, because I know in Canada it's illegal, and I think it's might be state laws on whether or not you can do gender selection in the U.S. I'm not sure. I worked at a fertility clinic for about a year, and it's pretty standard to do genetic testing on embryos for viability, and it's not that much to just see what the baby's going to be. So easy for that. But what I'm calling about is honestly the attacks on the disabled recently, and how, well, not surprising given that, you know, Musk and Trump are basically eugenicists. And,
right.
The, you know, pushback against it. Like, I have a very good friend of mine that's living in Washington State on disability, and I'm absolutely terrified if she loses her benefits, what she's going to do, because, you know, it's not like she can go get a job. Like, she can't work.
Right.
And it's, well, and also the attacks on Canada, but those seem to have lessened a little bit, given that I don't think Trump hates Carney the way that he hated Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, what is your theory on that? I saw that David Dole had a theory that basically was about how there were those viral articles about how Melania loved him and looks like she wanted to hook up with him. Yeah.
Absolutely. I bet it absolutely immaculated him that we had this young, you know, good-looking PM, even though, you know, he's terrible on so many things.
Right.
Not a fan. And Mark Carney, I mean, he just looks like your rich uncle. And but I think the support for Carney is so strong because during the 2008 crisis, he was hired to bring us through the great recession. And we did really well under his leadership in, at the Bank of Canada.
Right.
And then, you know, through Brexit, he was able to keep inflation prior to the pandemic at 1.6 per year with all that was going on in the UK. Like, that, like, honestly, I think that was incredible that he was able to keep inflation down so much during all of the initial turmoil. So it's like, yeah, you know what, we're on the path to having an like international economic fixer as our PM. And I'm okay with that because even if he can get a majority, then the real fight starts for then. Us for 4 years to build our real working class party, because the like the NDP, the leader of our like Social Democrat Party, he's kind of milquetoast. Like, he's just not that great at fighting the, like, he's gone, moved so close to the center now, like, he's practically a liberal as far as I'm concerned. So it's just, he'll lose badly in this upcoming election. Like, the support, they might get maybe 10 seats if they're lucky, but by the looks of it, which is pretty pathetic.
So then who would the liberals be striking a deal with in this instance? Still the NDP, but...
No, but if they get a majority, they won't need to strike a
deal.
And
that's in the cards now.
Pretty much. Like, we can't be complacent. Like, we really need to vote. Early voting should start within the next 2 weeks sometime. Like, it's hard to say when Elections Canada will get our voting cards out. But, you know, it's going to be a quick election. Like, you know, and... If we get a liberal majority, honestly, one thing about the liberals, no matter how horrible they are, like, pushing up against, like, corporate interests and stuff like that, when shit goes bad, they really do try and take care of the population to a point. Like, you know, during the pandemic, like, we were unemployed people were given monthly subsidies, not just like stimulus checks that the U.S. got. Like, they really took care of the unemployed. So I'm hoping if this trade war gets worse, like, they will take care of people. And, you know, that's one thing that we can, like, keep a bright spot, because if the Conservatives are in, like...
Oh, yeah.
Pierre Poilievre, like... You know, people like to talk about how Canada just follows what the U.S. is doing. It's like, no, the originator of, like, what the Conservative Party now started in 1998, very nationalistic, small party called the Alliance. And after they lost so badly, they infiltrated the Conservative Party, and Harper was one of their main guys. And Poilievre has been following... this part, like, that arm of the party since he was a teenager. And he, yeah, it's just like, you know, Milton Friedman loving asshole. Like, he's just so gross. And, you know, hopefully the attacks was enough to wake up enough people that the Conservatives will lose a lot of their, you know, undecideds to the liberal side.
Absolutely. Appreciate the call.
Because of this nonsense. Yeah. Thanks
so much.
Bye.
Do another one here.
While you're looking up, I just want to recommend a blog here from a Stephen Novella. He is, Russ, if you can put this up, the neurological blog, a discussion about biological sex. A really interesting look at a debate Novella had with a guy named Jerry Coyne. Spoiler alert, Jerry Coyne represents the strict, it's only binary position, and he, you know, I guess you can just read this and look in the debate themselves for who you think won, but I would just read this. My large point is that in the end, our labels are ultimately meaningless. They do not determine the reality, or I then gave an example, actually this isn't the section I wanted, but anyway, read this whole thing. The piece is called A Discussion About Biological Sex, if you needed, again, more education on the issue.
Calling from an 805 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'm using AirBuds. Yeah.
Cardinal sin. You're supposed to take those out.
Yeah. It's convenient.
Okay.
So I have a quick. So basically, my wife, she has DACA, and all this is kind of scary. I sort of want to stay anonymous, if that's
sure,
okay.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so we're considering leaving the country. We're kind of firm on it. We're thinking Mexico, just because that's where she was born. Yeah, we're sort of firm on that, because we're scared of that DACA will end and things will get worse. So, yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's...
Not really.
Go ahead.
Yeah, not really, like, necessarily looking for advice, just, you know, just trying to state something.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like these conversations are being had not just in your household, but with other people who, you know, even if... They're married, right? Which used to be kind of the way to ensure one's citizenry. There is a fear that you can basically, your family can get broken up at any minute. And that's exactly what the Trump administration is trying to engender in people. I don't think it's a crazy thought. I really don't. It's something I just, it's just... horrible that there are so many, you know, millions of people in this country that are living in that fear. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit before the show. Matt knows somebody that works in hospitals, and basically undocumented people are not coming in for medical procedures. And your wife's a DACA recipient, but people who are undocumented. Because they're afraid. They're afraid of going to any kind of formal institution that might put them in jeopardy. And that's a health hazard for a lot of folks.
And yeah, and we've looked at the process before Trump got in office, and we're struggling financially so bad. It's so much money. It's like, it could be up to $10,000 just for the lawyer fees. That doesn't include the other fees. So you're talking about $20,000-$30 or $20,000-$30,000
right.
At the end of the day. And when you're struggling financially, that's sort of, it's sort of a lot. And what I personally like about Mexico, or what I feel more comfortable in Mexico, is in Mexico, you know, there's an ability where we can both get legal status pretty easily. I mean, she's a citizen. I can get a visa relatively easily. And you don't have that. I mean, there are cartel violence, but I think a lot of it is sort of overblown. I mean, there's violence, there's violence in the United States. And just to state a little fact, cartel violence since Claudia came into power has dramatically decreased. But I think like 22%, the homicide rate. So, but the cartels, I mean, the cartels are, they still are powerful, but I mean, living in the U.S., I think, I mean, I'm white, I don't know if you could tell by my cadence, but I'm a white Jewish guy, and I try to explain it to my dad, and he's like, oh, well, wouldn't you just get kidnapped there? So there's still, like, a stigma. There's that stigma, and also my wife's family, they're not really super fond of the idea of her leaving, but a lot of them also had mixed status too. So,
right.
But I feel like we're sort of running out of options. I mean, it's not, you know, the most, and I think another option too, since I'm a citizen, maybe we should have spoken to a lawyer, but one option is that we could wait till maybe it gets better in like a year, two, three, 4 years from now, and then apply for a visa in that process. But either way, it's hard because with DACA, you need legal entry. And I think to be a DACA recipient, most people don't have the legal entry. And without legal entry, without coming here through a legal entry, it's sort of impossible, if not, because you have to re-enter anyways.
Right.
And there's a good chance of getting rejected through getting re-entering. And what's going on with everything, I mean, they're stopping people at airports. It's not really safe to do that anymore, especially how things are right now.
Well, my thoughts go with you and your wife. This is not an easy decision, but I completely understand you making it or considering it.
And just another point, my wife, she's a college graduate, the first in her family, and with having DACA, it's sort of difficult to find work in the field she studied. She went to Cal State Long Beach, and with having DACA, it's basically a worker's permit.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sort of limited on what you can or cannot
do.
Apply. Sorry,
right.
Yeah, I don't love talking about it, but I feel like it's important to talk about.
Appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
To this point, this is just today, a New York Times reporter uncovered this. It's in our tech chat that this woman, her name is Ramirez Verduzco. She apparently works at a nursing home in Michigan. She's 49 years old. She's a mother of two. She reported an assault to Michigan police where she says she was assaulted at her job. And you know what happened? Lisa Dwyer, Ramirez Verduzco's court-appointed lawyer, said during her client's arrest, people in unmarked clothes swarmed her car. They busted her window and dragged the 4'10", 49-year-old mother of two out of her driver's seat, scratching her arm in the process. She has been detained ever since. This is a woman who was the victim of a crime and reported that. Not acts, just the tip says, if the U.S. is willing to violently separate a family, there's not a whole lot of difference if the cartels do it. People are already dying because of these actions taken by our government. Tom from Maine, I think when it comes to Gen X and older, most of them are confused by the existence of trans people and are honestly weirded out by it, which I think is a gross response, but it would be totally acceptable one if it stops there and didn't bleed into aiding in dismantling their rights. I would agree. And I think for that cohort of people that you're talking about, when Donald Trump talks about how popular this issue is, they're not motivated, if they are just like a little bit weirded out, to vote against people or change their voting patterns based on those people. It's just not a salient electoral issue in that way.
Also, we had old people in like 2016 when being anti-trans was a political liability, and you saw this with like the North Carolina trans bathroom bills. They rejiggered their messaging to stoke up hysteria a little bit better by changing it from the you're going to be raped in a bathroom to your daughter's going to get tackled by a man playing college football, your hypothetical daughter. And it's worked a little bit better because there's not really any sort of real pushback on it saying, this election, you're going to vote based on a fever dream you have about what's going on in Little League girls sports.
Right. Kowalski from Nebraska. Typically, when we have a massive economic collapse, it's given a name like Black Tuesday, Black Thursday, or something ominous. I'm calling this upcoming April 2nd economic catastrophe Orange Wednesday. I hope everybody here will do the same. Trump calls it Liberation Day. Whatever the hell that means. NB Laborer. Conservatives don't want any women to play sports. It's very rich for them to want to protect the integrity of sports scholarships when they would prefer women not even attend college. Yep.
Again, they need to be seen like somehow protecting women as they attack women's rights in a way that hasn't been done in generations.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure abortion rights and reproductive rights are a little bit more salient to the average woman than, you know, the NCAA volleyball bylaws.
Also, what's her name was lying about that anyway? Didn't it look like that? Mm-hmm. Maybe get into that later.
Yeah, that woman was lying. What do you know? Sexually
confused. They can't make fun of anything.
Comedy.
That's what Emma's saying on
social Twitch. Media.
It's like legalized comedy.
All right, calling from a 513 area code. We're taking a lot of calls today. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hi, is this me?
This is you.
This is Al from Ohio.
Al from Ohio. What's on your mind?
Yeah. So I just wanted to call in and I guess with a couple things, but first off, I am in academia, and I wanted to warn anybody who was listening. Again, I'm in Ohio, so SB1 just passed. That is the anti-DEI bill. But I do, like, tours, and also, I don't know, can you guys hear me fine?
Yep, you sound great.
Okay. I do, like, tours and things like that for the university I work for, and we've had people coming by recently in the past couple of months with very dubious credentials, not with a group or anything, who say they're like college counselor, like independent college counselors, things like that, asking for tours or for information sessions, things like that. And there's enough red flags for the admissions staff to kind of send out a warning to each other, to be like, these may be whistleblowers who are trying to get like student ambassadors or staff to basically say, like, we're keeping the DEI stuff just under a different name.
Mm-hmm.
And there have already been videos, like hidden camera videos of like journalists, quote unquote, out of Texas, that are being distributed at like these conservative conferences and stuff. So I just wanted to warn anyone in academia, if there's someone that comes by that looks that there's some fishy stuff going on, to keep an eye out, because there are tip lines and stuff that the government, both federal and state, have already set up for these sorts of things. So.
Yeah, that is not shocking to me. I would think James O'Keefe, I'm not sure what he's up to these days. He was kicked out of his organization, but that's the kind of thing that they, you know, he would be engaging in 10 years ago. And I imagine there are a lot of groups that are doing the same kind of stuff here.
Yeah, it's very scary stuff. And I also, I am a medical student, and it's a very strange time period to be in, because I don't know how medical education is going to change between now and over the next 4 years, in terms of, because a lot of the education is like, we always hear about the one study where like 50% of doctors thought that Black people had higher
pain tolerance. Yep.
And whether that is going to be that study is going to be able to be taught over the next 4 years. We have no idea. I don't know. It's a very, very strange time right now. But
all right. Well, appreciate the call and appreciate the warning to anyone in academia.
All right. Thank you. Less is best.
Thank you.
Now, Daily Wire is doing 25%
layoffs,
maybe more. And the Target, just seeing now, Target suffers eighth week of foot traffic losses since caving on DEI. Costco, which resisted demands to end DEI, extends its streak of foot traffic gains to 13. The whole go woke, go broke thing, and again, like, I don't think that any initiative, whether it's for diversity or for environmental sustainability or workers, is worth much if it's not in a union contract. But that aside, it's very clear that going anti-woke is maybe not the greatest bet in the entire world.
No. I mean, they're insistent that this is the case. But, you know, we're seeing already a cultural backlash to this. These award shows overcorrecting or whatever, like now basically Hollywood saying like, oh, we don't want to touch the Trump stuff. That's not going to last. Brandon made this point last week, and it's just still sticking with me. The idea that we're kind of in a rapid way tumbling towards an environment that was similar to Bush's second term, where there was the Democratic Party was cowed, obviously, but there was a turn in sentiment against the Iraq war. The economy began to crash and society began to open up a little bit. There are periods of our history where rights contract, rights expand. There's a more equitable environment for people, for minority groups to have their voices heard. We're not in that point right now. We're in a very scary point for trans people, for immigrants, for black people, for gay people, etc. But how do we get out of that? It's through organizing. It's through community solidarity. And I already think, given how repulsive this administration is, there's a shelf life here. All right, guys, one more call, and that'll be the final caller of the day. Calling from a 206 area code. Who's this? Where you calling from?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I'm Amber from Seattle.
Amber from Seattle. You're the final caller of the day.
Well, thank you. I've been trying to call a lot of times, so it's fun. I've really been interested with kind of a study of the decline of empires, and I really think the U.S. is heading to a decline like any other empire.
Yep.
And that honestly scares the crap out of me, because I really think it is not going to be this I see a lot of people that want to think like, oh, we're going to become the Soviet, like Russia, like with the Soviet Union. I really think we're going to end up more like something like Syria, with just a bunch of sectarian violence. And I don't even know how we really can register that. I don't know if this is really a question, but it's just kind
no,
of like my own
it's
thing.
Your fear. I don't think that.
I think it's overstated. I don't think we're going to devolve into Syria. I think there's going to be what's happening the last 10 years is probably what's going to be happening the rest, which is that capitalism doesn't have the juice anymore to provide an actual generation over generation improvement like it did for, say, not even our parents' generations at this point, like our grandparents' generation. And that's going to have massive impacts. But like, as far as devolving into like Syria, I don't think we have the sectoral split that Syria has, frankly. I think people like, what are like McDonald's enjoyers going to like go to war against like Fuddruckers enjoyers? Like, I don't think we are. I don't think like there will. I mean, it's conceivable, like in Idaho or Wyoming or my home state, North Dakota, has had issues with white supremacists forming little enclaves and taking places over. That's really worrying. I just don't. I think America, like Britain's empire crumbled, and it's still dealing with it, frankly, like 100 years later or so. But they got like National Health Service out of it. So I don't know. Like I don't think it. I don't think Syria is the best model to maybe like prognosticate. Okay.
I still have my own fears about Balkanization, but to be fair, I've always kind of feel like DC and everything is just way too far away, and I'm more interested in my own local politics.
That's a good impulse.
And to some level, it's kind of like, for me, it comes off of just like, well, this country's all messed up. Why can't my state just become its own country? Because I live in Washington, so it's one of those West Coast states that are just, I mean, technically, I think economically, it's about the same size as Denmark.
Right. Well, I mean, this is like Alex Garland Civil War stuff. I mean, for me, and I'm not a huge fan of his work, so I don't mean to disparage what you're saying, because I think, you know, obviously there is a lot of fracture in our country. California is a top 10 economy in the world on its own. But yeah, part of why we're not going to devolve into Syria, our empire may decline, is because of just the way that capital is completely centered here. That's not going to change because of the vastness of the nation, the vastness of our natural resources, the fact that we have two huge maritime borders in the Pacific and the Atlantic that provide us with very advantageous trading positions. We also, I guess this is changing, but we have a friends, not enemies, on our northern and southern border. Trump is trying to change that, but I'm not necessarily a believer that that's going to result in war or violence. And so we're insulated from some of the worst of what we see in places like Syria, which is that they are basically victimized as little proxy states with the United States and other nations trying to influence them through militarism for extraction. That's the stuff I hope kind of falls apart. But unlike the Soviet Union breaking apart, the states that we control via our imperialism are across the sea. And so I do think I think that Matt's example of Great Britain is a better one there, because their colonialism and that kind of contraction makes more sense to apply to our context.
Okay. Well, thank you for helping settle some of my own fears.
And I'd also say I agree with Abe Lincoln that any place that tries to secede from the Union should be kept in the Union using violent force.
Mm.
I don't think that, like, say, the fall of the Soviet Union was necessarily a good thing. I think Balkanization generally is a concern, and it should not be encouraged. And to the extent that everyone gets on this little jag every time Republicans win office that California should secede or whatever, I think those people are like some of the most profoundly misled people in our politics and should be tuned out.
I appreciate it. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much, Amber.
Yeah, thank you. And left is best.
Left is best. All right, with that, that's our final call of the day. We were amazing at calls now. And now the air conditioning is finally in the room, and I feel so much better. I was about to be like, I need to end early. But maybe we do one more clip. Do we have anything here? All right, let's do this. Donald Trump. this is another... He's done this before about the N-word. Do you remember this? He's always saying
nuclear.
The N-word, nuclear, nuclear, nuclear. And he repeats that a lot.
But I think this is just him not being sort of edgy. This is him just not
being
able
there
to talk.
I've only seen it written down. I haven't heard him say this. So you guys be the judge. Here's Donald Trump on what the real definition of POC is.
And we hope this court system that's become so active all of a sudden in trying to protect some very, very bad people of crime. They have to stop. They have to let us do the job. We were elected to do the job. They shouldn't be interfering in that. It's a very sad thing that's gone. Nobody can even believe it. And
so is that just his brain making a connection between people of color and crime and then kind of blurting it out?
He forgot the word criminals. People of crime.
He's sunsetting, maybe.
Some of those people of crime aren't actually, it turns out, criminals at all. They're like hairdressers and soccer players.
Oh my gosh, do we have that thread? Can we pull this up about the tattoos that they're... that's just funny. Donald Trump is the oldest person we've ever elected to be president. Yes, older than when we elected Biden. He broke the record for Biden, and Biden had broken Trump's record previously. He's so checked out. That Laura Ingraham interview where he's just like marveling at the decor of the Oval Office and look at this curtain. Isn't that amazing? I mean, it's quite clear that he's at least, you know, he's severely diminished and not necessarily interested in doing any of the work of governing. But here, the ACLU put up images of what the government is alleging are Trende Aragua tattoos. The New York Post also published this in 2024. Aaron Reichlin Melnick, who's of the Immigration Council, who's a must follow on this issue, put a thread together. They did a reverse image search of the ACLU filed this document using seemingly the evidence that was provided to them by ICE, saying that these are Trende Aragua tattoos. The Jumpman symbol with Michael Jordan's number below it. An AK-47.
The star tattoo, which I think maybe the most common tattoo I've ever seen.
Wait, scroll to that because we can't see it. Yeah, that star tattoo, that's like every other 10 houses in suburbia has that, like, that, you know what I'm talking about? That star decor, whatever. It's crappy. It's like mid-century modern staple. Clocks, a skull with a gas mask. This is what's being used. Just keep going. Crowns. We saw that with the Real Madrid tattoo. Just to the next part of the thread. The Jumpman image, which the New York Post claimed refers to 23 de Enero, a Venezuelan neighborhood. It's Michael Jordan's number. Was first posted on Twitter in 2015 by a random Michael Jordan fan account. Keep going. The AK-47 tattoo. ICE says this is for Trende Aragua. Well, it appears that it was taken from a random Turkish tattoo artist's profile. Again, this is evidence that the government is providing.
The New York Post is who all these people cite, like Megyn Kelly when she was debating Glenn Greenwald.
Right. The train image, which the New York Post described as a shout-out to the gang's origins as a railroad labor union in Aragua, Venezuela, dates back to at least 2015, where it can be found on a random blog listing 70 train tattoo ideas for men. I mean, we can go on and on and on here. These are, like, here we go. The nautical star tattoo image used in the HSI document is just obviously not Trende Aragua. This has clearly been floating around the internet for years. Here's a random Facebook meme posted in 2020 using the image. This is who, like, they're classifying as criminals.
Again, like, the nautical star tattoo must be one of the most commonly tattooed images ever. I remember seeing people like that with that in college.
It looks like the Lone Star Texas star. I think we've got the gist of this. So instead of people of colors, people of crime, and this is the evidence that they're using here. It's outrageous, and this is why we need due process. It means that you can prove, if these guys are violent criminals and you were able to find their tattoos to determine who they are, you can determine whether or not that's true or not via a court proceeding. But it's very telling that the administration tries to avoid that at all costs, and the judge in D.C. has basically now said, in response to their filings where they keep delaying trying to present evidence, that they seem to have no desire to present the judge with factual information, and that it's flouting the court, laughing at the court.
Oh, these judges trying to get in the way of us, just trying to protect everyone from these people of tattoo.
I mean, they needed that photo op with Christy Noem. And they work backwards from there. All right, we'll read some IMs here and then get out of here. Molly Gray Jedi. That star reminds me of when we used to see that F everywhere, either Fallen or Family. I can't remember. Just the fans of Rob Dyrdek would all be trending Aragua.
Yeah, it's a skater tattoo.
Yeah. Or is it Trending Aragua?
Rob, oh my God.
Rob Dyrdek. He was the guy that ripped off that other Better show, right? No.
Oh, I don't know. I like Dyrdek's. It was just him in a warehouse, like, doing ollies or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong thing. Maddie Moron. Also, China is going to fund armed communist partisans here, and no one else could do that, what we've done to other countries during our imperial hegemony. Andrew Cuomo says, what is old is new again. I'm proud to announce that I'm partnering with the premier leftist channel TYT and hope their viewers support my campaign for mayor of New York City. We will defeat woke. We will defeat Me Too. We will punish the poor and we will bring peace and stability to my new empire. Thank you, Andrew Cuomo. Angela from Alberta, as a Gen Xer, I find it weird that anti-trans is such an issue among our generation. We grew up with gender-bending rock stars, Bowie, Boy George, Lennox, Cobain. Also, finally watched your interview with Laverne Cox. I loved it. Again, I don't necessarily think it is such an issue among the generation. I think generically when a pollster asks you if you support trans women participating in sports, there are going to be a lot of people that are uncritical when they react to it. It doesn't mean it's changing their voting motivations. There's a lot of stuff in polling that can be misleading. I think, you know, even though economic pain is the biggest driver of politics and part of why the Democrats lost this election, including the genocide that they funded, sometimes people will just say the economy when they respond to a pollster as the issue that caused them to vote for Donald Trump over Kamala Harris, because it sounds very reasonable to make that assertion. And you see the reverse with gun control, where you have like 80 to 90% of people supporting fundamentally kind of simple gun control measures. But that doesn't get passed because it's not reflected in voting patterns and doesn't swing elections for some of these representatives. So polling can mean a lot and it can be fun to look at as a guidepost. But like analytics in sports, you need the eye test, too. You can't just go off numbers and digits on a ledger.
People are so allergic to the material issue. The whole thing of the why what the Kamala Harris ad, she was for they, them and not you, is because the Democrats had not been coming through for you. If they had been, and you could, say, afford to rent a new apartment or fucking groceries, then that ad wouldn't have been as resonant.
Yeah. Also, it tapped into the idea that she was a flip-flopper. It's right. Not the nature of the issue. It was that she said one thing in the primary and then was saying another thing at that moment. That's what was more harmful. But they are invested in the idea that Trump has a mandate and that it was the issues that he ran on, you know, like sucking or like Arnold Palmer's dick. Sorry to be crude about it. That is like really motivating people. No, it's Trump and the personality and whatever. When you say that Democrats have to cave on trans issues because Trump won the election, you are granting that he won based on issues when he didn't. He didn't. He didn't run on anything. He won by default in many ways, except for saying the price of groceries were too high, and that's probably what did it. And then the Democrats' incompetence. All right, five more. Dave from Upstate. Emma, as a man who's never played a sport, I know if I had played a sport and been battered by a woman, I would have to take maybe the bus or car ride home to get over it. Did you stop to think about the hypothetical scenario that the conservative has been living in their head for decades? Left is best. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that the whole premise of the battle of the sexes? How many stupid ass men on sports radio said that they could defeat Serena Williams in a tennis match? It's a tale as old as time. Les Cajun says, let's go. Louisiana voted down all four draconian amendments this weekend. No on specialty courts, no on teacher raises tied to massive tax cuts for the rich, no on expanding ways to incarcerate minors and into adult prisons, no to rushing judicial elections. Small wins in this hellhole state, but wins nonetheless. Left is best. That's great news. Kentucky Leftist notes the F tattoo was famous stars and stripes. It was a skate brand, I'm pretty sure, for Emma. Rob Dyrdek did Ridiculousness, which was a straight ripoff of Daniel Tosh.0. All right, my brain is still working. That is true.
What? Ridiculousness wasn't a straight ripoff of Tosh.0?
Kind of. Viral clip reaction?
Wait, what was the show that he did?
You're thinking of Robin Big, which was a good show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't
know
he did another show. Although Tosh.0 was just the soup.
The soup was reality TV, and Tosh.0 was viral clips. Yeah, okay. All right, fair.
Or funny home videos. So.
Fine, the carbon copy of a carbon copy.
I'm just salty about Tosh because I saw him twice in Minneapolis. I think 2 or 3 years apart, and it was identical sets.
Ah. Yeah. That's not shocking, I guess. JR in Philly, the Tweety Bird tattoo is closely associated with the Venezuelan street gang Trende Aragua and their notorious feud with Sylvester the Cat.
And so is a dolphin tattoo on your Achilles.
Live, Laugh, Love is actually Trende Aragua translated to English.
Carpe Diem is a Trende Aragua.
And the final I am of the day, Burger Dude. My favorite band was booked at the Kennedy Center before the Trump takeover. Instead of canceling, they took a page out of your guys' book. They did something during the show to ensure they wouldn't get invited back. All right.
What's your favorite band?
Yeah, you got to tell us.
Keep them out of the publicity.
All right, maybe I'll do one more. Dark Soul. People also need to keep in mind that the average American has no idea how rampant things like steroids are in sports and Hollywood. Ask your parents if they think The Rock takes steroids and you will be bewildered by the answer of no. They have no effing idea how any of this works. They don't. They don't. And you talk to any trans woman and they say when they, like, within the first few weeks of starting hormone therapy, they feel a change in their strength and their muscle mass and that kind of thing. This is all solved. Any of the stuff that they're talking about is all solved by gender-affirming care and having access to it as a child.
90% of the men in media who complain about trans people like Joe Rogan are on gender-affirming care themselves.
Like Joe Rogan? Burger Dude says Guster. Guster is the name. All right, we got it. Shout out to Guster. All right, guys. Appreciate you all. We will see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive. Between the 101 and the 5. Do you know? Takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out.